It's time for Twig this week in Google, and a great panel awaits. Matthew Ingram and Stacey Higginbotham. They both work together at GigaOM. And, of course, Jeff Jarvis. We'll talk about the latest news from Google, Facebook's earnings, and a little bit of Twitter as well. Plus, this new talk show from a former Twitter executive. Is it good? It's all coming up next on Twig.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twig.
Bandwidth for This Week in Google is provided by Cachefly. CacheFly.com.
This is Twig, This Week in Google, episode 350, recorded Wednesday, April 27th, 2016. Chindogu. This Week in Google is brought to you by Casper, an online retailer of premium mattresses for a fraction of the price, because everyone deserves a great night's sleep. Get $50 off any mattress purchase by visiting casper.com/twig and entering the promo code Twig. And by Texture, the mobile app that lets you access the world's most popular magazines anytime, anywhere, using your phone or tablet. For your free trial, visit texture.com/twig. And by ZipRecruiter. Are you hiring? With ZipRecruiter.com, you can post to 100-plus job sites, including social networks, all with a single click. Screen, rate, and hire the right candidates fast. Try ZipRecruiter with a free 4-day trial now at ZipRecruiter.com/twig. It's time for Twig This Week in Google, the show where we cover the latest news, really from the cloud. In fact, after last week's episode with Mike Elgin, I want to call it our weekly packet. The weekly packet is in. That in Cuba, there's so little internet in Cuba. Mike was in Cuba for about a month, just got out of Cuba and is now in Mexico. And there's so little internet that there is a subscription USB key you get every week. You hand in the old one, and then you get the new one. It's got YouTube, you know, the hot YouTube videos on it. It's got stuff that you would get if you were on the internet, and it's called the weekly packet. And I like that idea.
I've got graphics working on it.
The weekly packet would be such a good name for the show, except nobody would understand it. I would explain it all the time. Jeff Jarvis is here from the City University of New York, professor of journalism. Hi, Jeff.
Hey, I feel like you doing two shows in one day.
I know. I saw it. Good job. We'll talk about that in a bit. And congratulations on that fabulous article in Esquire. Really enjoyed that.
Oh, please don't. Please don't.
That's for benefit of the lawsuit.
Too soon.
So you could take that clip and say, see, even Leo was confused. We'll talk about that in a little bit. Also here, Matthew Ingram. Great to see you, Matthew, from Fortune.com. Boxing gloves still hanging on the doorknob.
Just in case.
Just in case. And we're so thrilled to get Stacey Higginbotham on here. She was your colleague at GigaOM. And now writes about the Internet of Things, Stacey on IoT.com. You don't say Botham, do you?
I do. It's my last name.
Okay, so I dropped the H. So it's not Botham. It's Botham.
Oh, it didn't even register. I spent my entire formative elementary school years being called Higginbotham.
Higginbotham.
Emphasis on the bottom.
I think, isn't it kind of a British thing to drop the th and just call it t? But maybe not.
It's more German, isn't it?
Higginbotham.
I was going to say, we've been in America for years.
Okay, we'll call you Bothams. Bothams. The Bothams. Anyway, wonderful to have you. I'm a fan. I've been, a huge fan of your byline for years on GigaOM. Love the work you do, and I've really enjoyed you when you've appeared on our other shows, and I realize we've never had you on this show.
Well, thanks for fixing that. Yeah. I can't wait.
And you actually have the best voice in podcasting, by the way. Beautiful voice.
Thank you.
Were you a voice artist or something? I mean, you really sound good.
No, but now I'm thinking of a second career.
You should.
Journalism.
I think so.
You
I
should
think
try this.
Should. Yes. Cartoons.
Next.
Leo's never said that to me.
On the No, I haven't.
So there was a story this week that the voiceover guy who does Tom Hanks and George Clooney and all these other people in Germany died. Yeah. So it was really interesting to me that you had a voiceover guy was a star enough to do obits on and big stories around.
So people knew that he was dubbing the voices of those superstars?
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
That's actually a big thing.
Now they have to find like 10 other people.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I thought that in most civilized nations they use subtitles.
Mm-mm. No, there's lots of dubbing.
I thought they mocked us for in the United States because we had to have dubbing. But we don't do dubbing that much. We don't like dubbing. We like subtitles, right?
Maybe I got that's only if you're an art house snob.
Yeah. There seems to be a division. Some people prefer to have dubs, even if they're bad, and some people prefer to have subtitles.
God, I just hate dubbing because looks so phony.
It's so much better when you're watching. I'm going to age myself here. I've got a young kid. So musical comedies or like Disney movies, all the singing has to be redone or translated. And that's totally a voice actor right there.
Yeah.
Barely on topic, but did you see spiritofliberation.de?
No.
Evidently a new cache of World War II color film. I go nuts on color film from that age because it just changes your worldview so much.
It doesn't look so old, for one thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you're like, anything happening before color, it was all in black and white.
Right.
And so it's Normandy invasion, it's Berlin being destroyed, you know, and so on. But it's amazing to see it in color.
A German site. It's interesting. What is the... You're up on how the Germans feel about everything.
No, just about me. They don't like me, but that's all right.
What is the attitude? Well, your sneakers is a real insult to speak in.
Yeah. You saw that.
Yeah.
Oh, is it?
No, it's not. But they did. So they did a story on Jeff. Go ahead. Tell the story, Jeff.
They did a story when I was speaking in Augsburg, and they said, what was it? He talks freely and wears sneakers.
And that's has apparently a dial telephone.
The bat phone. Yes.
Hello, Mr. Jarvis. I have a call for you, person to person. Will you accept the charges?
It's Leonid Brezhnev.
So they don't mind. They enjoy these old-timey...
Well, there's a fascination with history, Lord knows.
Yeah.
And with the Berliner Zeitung, which is where I found this, does all kinds of great things where you look at, you know, a given scene then and now, that slider thing, which I love.
I saw one of those of Paris and Berlin, and this photographer overlapped new photos with historical. It was fascinating.
Yeah.
This is video.
I looked at that thing for hours.
Better.
Yeah.
So, but you have to pay. It looks like you have to pay for it.
You have to pay for it, but I might even pay this one.
Oh. let's look at the trailer. We probably could show that safely.
Yeah.
January 1933. Adolf Hitler became Chancellor of Germany.
Isn't that just amazing right there?
Wow.
Makes it so real in a horrible way.
Yeah.
Good color, too.
It's amazing color. Well, it's original color, but it's enhanced in resolution, they say.
It doesn't... wasn't that long ago, really. And so it does kind of give you a false sense of, oh, this is our ancient history when it's in black and white.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. It feels longer ago.
Yeah. I mean, look how vivid that is. That looks like real people.
Right, exactly. It's amazing how our brains, you know, if we still had black and white TV, we would think the world looks that way.
Operation Overlord.
And this is what, from the Donald Trump campaign? Is this? I'm sorry, I shouldn't have said that. Jeff Jarvis, what the hell happened? Do you not want to talk about this?
Not for very long.
I won't spend a lot of time, but I missed it. And I apologize because I would have immediately tweeted in support, but I was walking home. And I found out about it after the fact, after Esquire had already pulled it down. But Esquire unaccountably and inexcusably published a piece that was said by Professor Jeff Jarvis. It wasn't. I couldn't read it, but it wasn't even particularly funny.
It was a parody. Well, because it was a parody almost. Vanderhei had written an op-ed in the Wall Street Journal
saying Zuckerberg should run for president.
Would run for president, right? So this guy who has been torturing me now for 4 years.
So this is the Twitter guy.
This is the Twitter guy.
Yeah. Okay,
wrote a piece, and Esquire did a horrendous job. They did not label it. At the very top,
did they know it wasn't you? Thing.
Of course they did. Of course they
Well, then it's inexcusable.
And then only at the only way you could see this was at the very, very bottom of the piece, and we know nobody scrolls these days, in the ITAL ID, at the very end of that, it said not at Jeff Jarvis, as if anyone should be able to figure out which one's which.
And then later, after your complaint, they added.
Then Jake found this in a search, only by searching for the word satire on the page, at the very, very, very bottom, underneath all the Taboola crap and all the other crap and all the other crap and all the other crap, there was a whole big gray list of tags. In there, it said satire. That was it. That was the only effing label on the thing. I got terribly upset. I got really, really, really upset because I just had it. I've just absolutely had it. This guy has attacked people using my name.
That's it. He's just not at Jeff Char. So this would be even unethical. Somebody sophisticated, and I think some people who are sophisticated were fooled by this, thought it was you.
Because nobody's really going to do any forensic research.
And certainly nobody doesn't know you is going to assume it's you. It's right. Unconscionable for Esquire to do this. And, for one, I'll defend you as my friend and blah, blah, blah. But it's the larger issue of what's to stop this from happening all the time? If you don't have
a journalistic institution of any sort should never try to fool its readers. It's unethical. It's wrong. So I ended up on Twitter with the assigning editor. He asked me to email him. He never gave me the response, the respective response then. I'm in a very privileged position. I know people at Hearst, at the parent company. I went to my email list. I went to very high people at Hearst. I can do that because I'm connected here and I'm a professor in New York and I know people. You know, the average schmuck who got in the situation couldn't do that. But I used that privilege to email them, an executive email back very nicely, included two others. They then put a label in that said, it was worse in a way, because it said, by at Professor Jeff Jarvis, a satirical whatever. I said, read that sentence. That says that a guy named Professor Jeff Jarvis.
Have a satirical Twitter.
No, I said, listen, at first I was very angry and I said, take it down. Then I said, listen, you take my name off of this. I'm collateral damage. Take my name off of this in any way, and you can do whatever the hell you want. I'm not, fine. But then a higher executive came in and said, and apologized and said this was inexcusable.
Because I think they're exposed. But, no. I frankly think
well,
that they're...
Well, no, I mean, that's going to
be... Oh, come on. No. You can't do that. You're a public figure. I'm a public figure. If somebody starts publishing stuff over my name that I didn't write, I would sue the hell out of them.
Well,
and
you
should.
So I asked for a lawyer because I didn't connect with one, but people say, oh, he's threatening. Listen, yes, it's defamatory. Yes, I believe it's actionable.
It's not even that. It's confusion. You know, the biggest awards in trademark confusion, trademark awards, and I know this because I talked to attorneys about Twitter, because Twitter was named Twitter after Twit. And so I talked to attorneys, but are we protected, et cetera, et cetera. And they said, well, if you wanted to pursue it, the way to pursue this is trademark confusion, that people would assume, as they do, that Twitter, that I copied Twitter, not vice versa. And I would think that this would be a similar issue. This is confusing exactly people about you, damaging to your reputation.
It's use of image and name. And
yeah, that's there's a personality, right?
Yeah,
there's a personality, right?
I wanted to get some more background on that. So they took it down. I knew what would happen. I knew exactly what would happen. Then I get smashed. All of the trolls travel in packs. So certain trolls that have left me alone for years come back out. Other trolls come in, attack me on Twitter, calling me a...
Well, and that's the problem. It's the Streisand effect if you fight
it. So what are you supposed to do? You're supposed to sit back and just take everything?
No, you're not supposed to take
that. At some
point,
no, as my son said, you pull the Band-Aid off. So I went on Medium and I posted saying, this is what happened. And then I heard today from a reporter at Gawker, of all effing places, Gawker, trying to act haughty with me. Hello? A little hard to look haughty from the sewer fellas. So I also responded to that and put that up. And I just put it there and let the snow roll off. This guy has had his fun for 4 years now, 4 years ago.
It's not about
he
this.
He promised to change the name. He promised Jason Ponton of MIT Media Review, who intervened. He didn't do it. He just said on Twitter that, oh, it's just not a priority. Yeah, he had 2 years.
Yeah.
BS, fella. BS. I've had it. You've had your fun. I avoided this because I didn't want the crap, but I've just plain had it. I got so upset last night. My anxiety attack was going for the first time in 2 years. I felt like I was going to go into AFib. And I said, for this to end up in the frickin' hospital?
No. Well, you shouldn't. But
so that's it. That's the story.
Yeah. We don't need to belabor it, but I think it's damaging to Esquire's brand. Very damaging.
Well, I think they know that. I think this is what I asked them for again and again and again. I said, what is your policy? I want your policy so I can write about this. And I never got it. And I suspect they don't have one. I suspect they will now. Because the basic rule here
every journalist enterprise should have a rule about this. This is unacceptable.
The bottom line is you do not fool the reader. That is the worst thing a journalist can do in any possible world. You don't fool the reader. And the effort of this guy and the Esquire in this case was to think, oh, we're all clever and we're going to fool the reader. No, that's unethical. It's unjournalistic. And that was it. So I want to move on now. And thanks for the support. Lisa did a nice tweet today about this as well. And I appreciate that. I appreciate lots and lots and lots of very supportive tweets. Very good friends who came in. People who mean a lot to me. Dan Gilmore, Zainab Tufesky, Neil Dash. A lot of people just really were very, very, very nice. Matthew came in. I saw came in today. And that really means a lot because it just, the junk people come after me. I put one bad tweet you don't want to show on the air in the piece, and you just get tons of that junk, which by the way, is convenient because now I can tell all the jerks and I just block them. I have blocked another 100 jerks and my life will be quieter, and that's nice. So thank you. That's it.
It's just kind of shocking. I know. It just doesn't... And I think it's not just about you, Jeff. I mean, we're already in a kind of a loosey-goosey environment in terms of internet journalism. And the last thing you want, I mean, what if somebody wrote it's fake Steve Jobs said fake Steve Jobs. Dan Lyons wrote that for a long time, but there was never any question that wasn't Steve Jobs.
Exactly. Exactly. And I don't know that Steve Jobs was pleased about it, but at least Dan Lyons.
Oh, I'm sure he wasn't, but it wasn't pretending to be Steve Jobs, and this is pretending to be you. And if somebody wrote a piece over George Clooney's name, you could bet they'd be getting sued like crazy. I mean, that's a brand.
Letter.
I'm shocked, frankly, that they would do that. And it
have
really
you ever talked
them.
To Twitter, Jeff, about him changing his name or forcing him to change his name on Twitter?
The problem there. No,
they allow parody accounts.
I mean, did last night. And I don't know what's going to happen there. The problem is, Matthew, is that it's the Streisand problem, is that if I cause the account to be killed, then you know what, the guy took down his account own account down inexplicably a few months ago, and there were news stories that I caused this to happen. Can you get a life and do real news? No, I didn't cause it to happen, and so no, but at this point I am over the edge. Some people are trying to intervene and just say, listen, you've had your fun. You've had your time. Just change the name.
Yeah.
He's said for some time, oh, I'm not really making fun of Jarvis. I'm making fun of this type. Well, then change the name. Mm-hmm. Very simple. You know, call yourself, I don't know, Higginbotham.
No, don't do that.
Sorry, Stacey. I think it's a nice name. I like that name.
No one would be able to spell it.
Fake Jeff Jarvis, I've got a fake Matthew Ingram.
Why still involve me anymore? Just take me out of it. Just take me out of it. You've had your time. 4 years.
He's built a brand around it, though. I mean, that's what he does. So.
Which is really sad, you know? It's a really sad thing. This guy doesn't have... You know, he wanted to write his parody piece? Put it on your own byline. Be proud of it. Wasn't very good, but fine. Be proud of it. It's yours.
I think maybe that's the problem. He's writing bad... He's not good enough to write it for his own name. He just wants other people to suffer.
You're right, Stacey. Exactly. And so that's exploiting me at my...
It's shocking.
Pain. You know,
it's one thing to do it on Twitter. It's another thing for Esquire to do it. And I just really,
And they know it. They apologized. Yeah. Well, at least one executive there.
It's permanently damaging. Sorry, Esquire.
Well, then Gawker put it up, of course.
I wrote them off ages ago. Do they still have reporters? I thought, what are they doing?
Politics.
I guess not.
No, I guess not. Yeah, exactly.
They can't. Do you know what? Once you taste blood, it's very hard to wean yourself off that flavor.
Yep.
All right. Facebook results are in. It seems so bloodless to talk about, but Twitter results, not so good. In fact, Apple, not so good. Microsoft, not so good. A lot of not so good results.
Facebook crushed it, though.
Actually, Facebook was the one win, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Big win.
Yes. Significant.
Analyze, please. I want him to do the work. You got three people. I should be sitting back enjoying my tea listening.
Facebook beat every estimate, I think, on every metric, as far as I can tell.
What are the things that we look at to see how well Facebook's doing? Mobile engagement, mobile ad sales, mobile, right? How it's doing in mobile.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's an advertising-based company.
Yeah. And advertising, I mean, I think 79% of their revenue was from mobile ads. I remember. Not that long ago, people writing think pieces about will Facebook ever figure out mobile?
Yes.
It actually wasn't that long ago.
A year and a half ago.
Two years ago. It was like Facebook doesn't get mobile, Facebook. And now 79% of their ad revenue, which is massive. I mean,
that's the
gigantic.
Power of having a billion, is it a billion five monthly active users? Yeah. I mean, yeah.
And a billion daily.
Right.
They said, I think, a billion daily. So Q1 revenue, $5.4 billion. That's a single quarter. 79% of that from mobile ads.
You know, I think the difference here, too, is I mean, they have more data about us and about content than I think than Google. We could have that discussion, which has more. But I think you could argue Facebook has more opportunity to target in a relevant way at a higher value and performance. Google bought up a whole bunch of the ad infrastructure that puts it in the rest of the ad business. Facebook is doing this entirely on its own platforms.
Mm-hmm. And I think that one key difference is Google has lots of data based on, you know, just the volume of people doing things. Facebook has a lot of data based on other aspects of your behavior. So clicking, liking, commenting, sharing. Google doesn't have access to any of that stuff except through Twitter, which it cut a deal with. It has some on Google Plus, which I think was the whole point of launching that, was to get that kind of behavioral data, because that stuff is gold to advertisers. If you can kind of draw multiple vectors between you like this and you commented on that and you shared this and therefore you're going to like this specific car or whatever.
We know who you know and we know what they like. Mm-hmm. And we, you know, And again, I have no problem with that.
Do you guys, is there a different way of valuing the advertising for something like Facebook, which is kind of more entertainment and kind of downtime, versus Google, which is very information oriented? Because that's kind of the way I think about how they...
Great question, Stacey. Great question. Because, you know, what you just put your finger on, is that the question of direct response versus branding and advertising. You're right. Google is direct response, and they're brilliant at that, and they can target terribly well to that, and so can Facebook. But what Facebook really has is this familiar, intimate place. And I think you may have hit something, that the opportunity for branding advertising, which media are dying to hold on to, mm-hmm. now can go to Facebook.
And in a way, Google's sort of, you know, made its own bed. I mean, it pushed programmatic direct response to the point where that's a significant proportion of all the advertising you see online, and the money they and others make from it is minuscule. And so you have to have massive, massive scale. So they're very, very good at that type of advertising, but not so good at lots of other kinds of advertising.
Leo, do you advertise any of the shows when you start a show or anything? Do you? So what do you find about?
I don't know. I don't indulge in all that stuff. I try to keep myself distant from incoming and outgoing ad dollars. I don't want to know anything about it.
The other thing about Facebook is that it's really subtle. Mm-hmm. You know, understanding how you're getting the ads that you see, it's both like they're amazing at their machine intelligence, but they're also on the back end. I'm shocked at the inputs I can put on Facebook to reach people.
It's amazing. The granularity, kind of it's incredible. If you've looked at any of those sliders that you can choose, mm-hmm. When we were running a conference in Toronto, we had a guy who dove deep into Facebook, and there's just so many things you can target by.
Like, well, I'll give you an example. So Jason granular. Calacanis said, here's what you should do. Jason, of course, knows all this stuff. He said, what you should do is you've got a newsletter, you've got a mailing list. Now what you do is you feed that mailing list to Facebook, and you say, I want people like these people.
Yes.
Because they already know everybody's email. I want people like these people. So you don't even have to say what these people are like. You just know these people are active mm-hmm. viewers, so they wanted the mailing list. So we're not doing this, by the way. Just telling you, you could. And then Facebook churns those numbers and says, good, I have another 10,000 people who are like those people, but not subscribed to your mailing list. Would you like to buy that ad? And of course, that's who you want, right? It's more of those engaged viewers. That kind of granularity is amazing.
And so if you think about, like I think about this from a sort of media point of view, if you're a newspaper or a magazine or even a TV station for that matter, you know basically diddly squat compared to Facebook about your users. And I know this is something Jeff's talked about as well. You know kind of hazy general vague things about the group of people who consume your content. Facebook knows people down to, you know, their height. Like they, you can, yeah. So you can,
but you can leverage it, which is interesting. Right. All you need so is their email address, and Facebook says, well, we know all about that guy.
Right. And if you're an advertiser, you get to say, I want a woman between 32 and 37 who lives in these specific geographical areas, who likes these TV shows, who's voted for these things, who's probably pro-choice. Like the sort of
now,
depth
here's the
of
question.
Targeting you can do is mind-boggling.
Is that offensive given that it's anonymized? They're not, for instance, if I buy that list, I don't even get to see who those people are that match.
Yeah, you're right, Leo. And in fact, I can go to data warehouses right now, and I can buy a similar list where I do get the list, and I do get to mail it out myself. Where on Facebook, Facebook becomes a shield between the advertiser and the
So is it an invasion of privacy? They're anonymizing it? They're not giving that information out?
I don't think so. I don't think so.
Well, I mean, okay, we don't think so. Do real users think so?
Maybe. I think it's a little questionable. I mean, we face that actually. I'm building an IoT newsletter right now, and we debated, do we stick the addresses we have in there and get that?
There's That's why I don't things. Do that, because of perception, not because of reality so much, but perception.
But well, I think it is iffy. And there's also the question of there's no accountability for how good Facebook is. And that kind of black box element is really scary, because if I look at my list right now, it's mostly guys who are like, yeah, Internet of Things. But there are lots of women and moms out there who would love to know about connected, I don't know, light bulbs and everything that I care about. But they're probably not seeing it. But I don't know that. And that's the black box approach that kind of frustrates me.
So here's my favorite story that will probably creep
hold,
you
hold on a second. And one other issue, of course. You give your mailing list to Facebook. There's no guarantee that that's not adding to Facebook's information.
Right.
Giving your subscribers something about your subscribers to Facebook, another quantum of information. I'm sorry, Jeff. Go ahead.
No, not at all. So I don't know if I've told this story on the show before. A reporter called me about privacy some time ago, and he said that to his friends and family, he was talking intimately to them about how he was feeling, and this happened that was weird, and that happened was weird, and this happened, and that happened. And then he saw an ad come up on Facebook for multiple sclerosis treatment.
I ignore this stuff, because this is all anecdotal. There's a lot of this kind of anecdotal stuff. And people are really good at finding coincidences in the world.
Yeah, but I think that there were symptoms there. And the point here was actually a benefit, because he wasn't diagnosed. He didn't know why he was feeling.
So did he find out that he had MS?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
See, that's a benefit.
And, holy cow.
And certainly you can hear the creepy line argument.
Yeah, you don't want to be diagnosed by your Facebook posts.
But that's knowledge, right? And knowledge is not a bad thing. No. We keep on demonizing the idea.
No, Jeff, come
on. It's who it's shared with.
Okay.
It's who it's shared with.
So now Facebook says, oh, this guy has all the symptoms of MS.
Facebook didn't do that.
No, they didn't.
The advertiser asked for certain keywords.
I understand. We think Facebook didn't do that, but that's what privacy advocates are most worried about.
Well,
is that database will then be sold. Insurance companies will deny that guy insurance.
But they didn't do that.
Or use it as a pre-existing condition. I guess you can't do that.
And actually, to be fair, I think far more than Facebook, we need to be worried about all the data resellers and packagers that are already out there.
They all know.
You know,
there are a couple of
huge companies. Yeah. That's all they do is build basically data files.
They've been doing it for decades.
Without your knowledge.
It's nothing new.
Right. But I think that the change is the internet makes it so much easier. We're putting so much stuff on there. And the algorithms and the models for deciphering the stuff we put out is just so much better and cheaper to get to.
Right.
Freaky is that Facebook won't just have it. Your insurance company, if they wanted to, they could probably, you know, do a deal with Watson, IBM's Watson, and start like filtering through all your social media posts.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, that's crazy at an individual.
Hello, Mr.
Jarvis. Yeah. This is your local FBI agent. According to Facebook, you're about to commit a crime. You probably haven't committed it yet, but I just want you to know we're watching.
Pre-crime.
I mean,
Just tell him it's Professor Jeff Jarvis.
Not me. It's that other guy.
Well, there. I saw a story recently where there are intervention programs to try to identify people who could be, young people especially, who could be vulnerable. And they use various signals to that. It's just data. It's just information. And in this case, yes, they're going after you, but they're stopping you from a life of crime and intervening to give you services so that you won't. And what's wrong with that? Oh, no, so they're suspecting me. Well, they're trying to improve your life because they recognize you're at risk.
This is a topic when I was talking with the people who are building machine learning algorithms at Facebook. They actually brought this concept of, hey, we could probably look at what you're posting and see someone who is likely to commit suicide. But do we have an obligation? Should we step in? And that's something they actually think about. Which, yay for them for recognizing that that's kind of creepy, but also a benefit. And I just don't think as society we've gotten to the point where we're like, yay.
The problem is the benefits and the disadvantages are so entwined. You know, you don't get the benefits without the disadvantages. It's a little like the internet itself. It's simultaneously the best thing ever and the worst thing ever. So
you can't trust anyone who's trying to sell you something. That's part of the problem.
But you can get benefits from it. So the Target example where Target sent that family messages about their daughter and her pregnancy, and the father didn't even know she was pregnant, but Target knew because they had looked at all the things that she bought and determined that she was probably in her first trimester. That's a horrific story in a way, because the dad found out from Target that his daughter was pregnant. But
so that was a misuse of the data, yes.
Right. But you can also see examples where finding something like that out would actually be a good thing. It might not be the way you want to find out, whether it's a diagnosis of MS or cancer, or it's information that could be useful to you. The question is how you get it and who else gets it, and then what they do with it.
It's not even who else gets it. It's who else can put those pieces together, because they're everywhere.
Yeah, and we're leaving them voluntarily, all that data smog or whatever that we leave behind ourselves. I talked to a guy actually whose company is designed for marketers. So he tries to kind of build behavioral profiles for marketers and brands. And he said he was approached by insurance companies. And they said, so here's what we'd like you to do. We'd like you to do exactly what you do for the brands, except we want you to focus on people's behavior that is a breach of their insurance. So if they've filed a claim, a back claim, and you see them sharing photos of themselves playing Frisbee, we would like you to...
This is the first time I've heard a verifiable case of that. This is the example everybody brings up, but I've never, ever heard this actually proposed. So I think that's really interesting. So I've always said, insurance companies don't care because... when you fill out a form saying I don't do any of that stuff, they hope you'll do that stuff because then they can, and then they find out about it, and then they can not give you insurance.
So in this case, they've already paid out claims.
Ah, they're trying to get the money back.
Workers' insurance. Yeah. Right. So they're trying to show it's that the fortune person cookie. Who made the claim is basically lying about whatever was wrong with
Interesting.
Them.
Interesting. So that's true.
And in fact, this company, this guy said he wasn't sure. He felt sort of ethically. That it was a little questionable. He wasn't sure whether he was actually going to do it for these companies or not.
Right. Oh, well, I mean, okay. I'm going to make myself unpopular, but if someone did lie on their insurance claim, insurance fraud is a big deal. It costs everybody.
Huge deal.
You know, figuring that out would be beneficial for everyone.
But it's one step removed from the next step, which is deny insurance.
Right. Which is you posted photos of you eating hamburgers, so we're not going to insure
you. You're going to have a heart
attack. Heart claims, right?
Right, and that I'm
or your
totally
friend
with that.
With symptomatic, not with diagnosed with MS, but because once you're diagnosed, thanks to the Affordable Care Act,
then they can't
deny it. But if they could get pre-diagnosis, bingo. That's
it's going to happen. Though.
I guarantee you that they're trying to figure out how they could do
it's
that.
Happening right now.
And this is one of those things where we need better regulation. I'm not a huge fan of getting the government involved, but this is not something we can solve.
Yeah, you still have your British roots, I can tell.
Come to Canada. We got all kinds of regulations.
You can say it's been a century, but no.
All right, let's take a little break. I am liking this panel. I think we should do this for every week from now on. Matthew Ingram is here from Fortune.com. Stacey Higginbotham from StaceyOnIoT.com. I want to find out how we can subscribe to that, Stacey, in just a second.
Just go to that website.
Okay. Simple enough. And let's not get just a bunch of guys going there, okay? Some women would be nice because you could use it too. And do you cover things like the Amazon Echo?
I do.
That's a thing on the internet.
Huge thing.
Yeah.
I was actually going to bring up the connected Bluetooth pregnancy test that came out.
Yeah.
The news about it came out this week when we were talking about Target.
Good. Let's talk about that next.
I saw your
tweet about that. Up to your Echo. Alexa tells you, you're pregnant.
It's not what you want, I don't think.
As long as she doesn't tell everyone else.
And then Alexa tweets it as well.
Would you like me to order a bassinet set?
Yes. I see you keep ordering pickles and ice cream. Is there something you'd like to tell me? Jeff Jarvis, the real deal, the one and only, is also here from BuzzMachine.com. Our show today brought to you by Casper. By my mattress, I slept so well last night. Have you noticed? I don't know if you've noticed. I look rested lately.
You're looking refreshed.
Yeah. I'm refreshed. I've lost weight. I'm feeling good. And I think as we have learned, how well you sleep, how good a night's sleep you have, has a lot to do with your overall health and well-being. So getting the right mattress can make a big difference. Now, the problem I see is that you can't really find the right mattress by going to a mattress store and lying on a bunch of mattresses. Broad daylight, the salesperson's looking at you kind of funny, and you know, you're kind of lying there in your shoes saying, oh, that's comfy. What do you think, honey? The better way to do it would be get a mattress and sleep on it for days and nights and weeks and months, and then decide, and that's what Casper lets you do. Live the dream, the perfect mattress, and by the way, sheets and pillows too. I love my Casper pillows. Can be yours direct from the factory. These are great mattresses, obsessively engineered mattresses, made in the USA, sold direct to you, so there's no middleman, there's no extra cost, so it makes them very affordable, and you have 100 nights to decide. So you buy the mattress. It comes in a surprisingly compact box, by the way, which was great. There's our box. You can tell I'm a little, maybe a little over anticipation because I'm already in my jammies. And that's a queen in that box. It opens up. By the way, does not smell like rubber or latex or the factory or anything. It's fresh. These mattresses breathe. They're very cool sleeping, which is also very important. There it is, a queen-size mattress. Boom. And comfy. So anytime in the first 100 nights, if you decide, it's not for me, you call them, and they will come and get it. They will fund you every penny, so it will have cost you nothing. So don't fear the Casper. Embrace the Casper. Lie on the Casper. Enjoy the Casper. $50 off any Casper mattress right now at casper.com/twig. Some terms and conditions apply, so visit casper.com/terms to find out about that. But casper.com/twig. And the offer code TWIG. And while you're at it, get some Casper pillows. It's funny, we fight over our Casper.
Leo, have you seen the sleep bus?
What's the sleep bus?
The sleep bus. Sleep.
Oh
bus.
Yeah, I have seen the sleep bus. They should it's have Caspers on the sleep between, bus.
Well, they have they advertise that they have Casper sheets.
You're kidding me.
Oh.
What is so great about these pillows?
The pillows, okay. That's a good question. And since you're a mother, you should know. So I don't understand the manufacturer. They might say on the website what the materials are and stuff. I always like down pillows. I was a down pillow guy for years. But the problem with down pillows is they get weird after a while. They get lumpy. They get flat. So these are not down, but they're not like those rubber pillows either. I hate rubber pillows. I don't know what they're doing. But these, just like the mattresses, have this kind of great mix of support but comfort. It's really a great pillow. And you can get, and by the way, get the king because it's huge. It's a body pillow, basically. So I really like, cuddle up to my body pillow.
TMI.
I'm not going to marry it. I'm telling you. My whole life, it's had to be down pillows. Now, completely changed. This is the greatest pillow.
Is it always on the cool side of the pillow? Oh, yeah. There it is.
Oh, there it is.
See? Like a little penguin. No, it is. And that's true, by the way. It really does do that. read the reviews and listen to me because I have Casper pillows. And like I said, we fight over who gets the Casper pillow. I need more.
I will check that out.
I used to have
pillows all the time.
Yeah. I used to have six pillows on my bed. Me and Lisa and I have three pillows each. And I now have two pillows because of the Casper. I don't need six pillows. They're really great pillows. But that's another story for another day. Casper.com/twig. Promo code twig. $50 off any mattress. I would get the pillow while you're doing it. Casper. Stacey Higginbottom is here. First time on the show. Really nice to have you.
Thank you.
Many years at Giga Ohm. And now doing Stacey on IoT. And that is, how often does that newsletter come out?
It's weekly. Every Friday it comes out. And I think
it's free. It's free.
This is the sixth one. I know. What?
How are you gonna make money at that?
I'm hoping for advertisers. This is my media empire plan. So we'll see what happens. I've got
Stacey does a lot of endorsements and stuff, you know.
No, she doesn't.
T-shirts.
There are no endorsements.
There's
no
appearances.
The Internet of Things. You picked a great beat. I'm really excited about the Internet of Things. This is good. You even do a show about the Internet of Things.
I do. I have a podcast on the Internet of Things, also weekly, and it comes out on Thursdays. And basically, my colleague Kevin Toefel and
I. Oh, we love Kevin.
Everyone loves Kevin.
Kevin Toefel.
He's a regular also on the show.
So, yeah.
So what you're saying is, what you're saying is you only work once a week.
Ha! I work all the time. I'm like, do you know how much time I spend on my house keeping everything operational?
Yeah, I do know, actually.
I know. So it's tough.
Especially if you have the IoT stuff. That stuff will bring you down, man.
All the light bulbs and the oven that talks to you and stuff.
Actually, your most recent podcast is about Ford bought a Tesla at a great expense. They, you know, on retail and tore it down, apparently. Mm. And I have to listen to this. What did Ford learn from the Tesla?
I'll give you the sneak peek since we're about to publish next week's episode. They learned about updates, that the big learning they had
over the air updates.
Huge. And how to communicate that with drivers. And I feel like something else, but
that's huge. I had a Ford Mustang for a long time and I never updated it, even though there was an update process, but it required going to your computer, downloading software, putting it on a USB stick,
SD,
bringing it to your car, going so through painful. The menus, which are arcane at best. And I never did it for that reason.
I remember being at, actually it was a GigaOM conference that Stacey was at. I'm trying to remember which one now. And I was talking to someone, I can't remember who, but the CEO of some big tech company. It might have been Sonos. Anyway, I can't remember if Stacey was there, but we were talking about Tesla and the over-the-air updates. And he said that I think he was living in Europe or something. And he said the car kept grounding out on the cobblestones because the ground clearance was too low.
Suspension problem.
So he emailed, air suspension.
Yeah.
So he emailed Elon, and Elon said, I'll fix that. And the next over-the-air update, his car's ground clearance increased.
Brilliant. But more than that, I think this is an Internet of Things issue as well. And we've talked about this on our security show. When you start putting all these devices in your house, and there will be security flaws. I think of the Ring doorbell, which had a security flaw. Somebody could steal your doorbell and from it get your internet, your Wi-Fi password and your access codes. And that would be a problem. So before that was even published, Ring updated it over the air. And nobody even knew that they had this capability. And if anybody's going to build an IoT device, if they don't build in over-the-air updates, don't buy it.
There's the Ford guys, we talked actually about their security on the show, but there's kind of two things to think about with over-the-air updates. In the automotive world, for the longest time, they were verboten because they didn't have the security measures in place.
Right.
And they didn't want to leave basically, it's not an open port, but the equivalent of a greater surface area for attack. The other thing is, for over-the-air updates to work just in general, you have to actually build your device a little bit differently. And this is like what's been happening with all the old school routers. You have to make it so when you update the air and update the software, that the device doesn't have to be like turned off and rebooted and all of that. And that's actually something you have to decide like at the very beginning.
Mm-hmm.
So that's we're going to see more of it. But, you know, the security stuff you've got to think about. You've got to think about it from a design when you're building this stuff too. So it'll be a while.
Yeah, and I guess the president's limousine probably doesn't have over-the-air updates, which would explain how it got stuck on a ramp in Ireland. Did you see this video?
Did it? No.
Yeah, watch.
I saw them do a, like, 10-point turn in the middle of a road.
Here somewhere. Comes this thing. I mean, it's armored, so it weighs, like, 18 tons. Here it comes.
The beast, they call it.
Oh, no.
Ground it out.
Oh, no.
Oops.
Stuck.
Push.
I was about to say, it's armored in the back. That guy behind him can push it.
It just weighs like 40 tons, though.
What it's they just, do?
Let's show you again, because it's just funny. I guess the president got out and hitchhiked.
And they figured it out.
If you've ever done that, I think you get a tow truck is what you get.
I was going to say, do they have a special tow truck just for the presidential limo? Because that thing's, like you said, it's heavy.
Yeah,
it's
40 tons.
Look,
yeah.
Everybody's getting out.
Well, about 2 seconds.
Look at the driver. You don't want to be this driver. Oh.
They should have those shock absorbers where they can inflate them or deflate them.
Or an ejection seat.
I'm sure they have an ejection seat.
POTUS has
That's
been ejected.
That's a little drastic.
I'm going to keep watching to see if he suddenly flies out of the room.
The PR department steps in and has this van move in front.
Yeah, because they don't really want any more pictures. Here comes POTUS. that is quite embarrassing. Yeah, let's just block the view and nobody
usually
will.
Usually they drive those routes in advance, but I guess maybe they didn't account for the ramp.
They didn't account for the president being in the back seat, probably.
Or maybe he's got an advisor who's a little heavier.
Chris Christie was joining him for that particular
That's
ride.
Right. Oops.
I wasn't going to insult any particular person.
I know. I was rude. I'm sorry. I apologize. You're nicer than I am, Stacey.
I'm very nice.
Hey, they are continuing, by the way, as we speak, they're continuing the Facebook earnings call is going on right now. And as they do the earnings call, we're learning some more information. The total monthly active users is even higher than we said, 1.65 billion.
Whoa.
1 wow. billion monthly, 1 million daily active users on mobile. That's not everywhere. That's mobile. According to Mark Zuckerberg, more than 1 billion people have been using Facebook daily on mobile, the average slightly below that. They are also restructuring. They're adding a C class of stock because Mark wants to give away money and he doesn't want to dilute his shares. Control. And the attitude of the management is, look, you like how we're running the company, right? Well, if you want us to keep running the company, you have to have this new non-voting class of stock. Otherwise, we're going to dilute Mark's shares. He says, I won't sell more than $1 billion worth of stock a year.
Oh.
Wouldn't that be nice?
Me neither.
Wow.
You got that pledge.
It's been amazing, actually. This is something a lot of people don't pay attention to, I don't think. But from the minute Facebook went public, Mark Zuckerberg effectively controls that company single-handedly.
Yeah.
Right.
So not just through the stock, he controls the board as well because he's got proxy votes from a bunch of other co-founders. So he named people to the board. So it's not just control of the stock. It's effectively control of the entire company going forward.
And as forever. Anybody who watches Silicon Valley, which is the TV show where I learn all about how this stuff works, you can get voted out by your board.
Yeah
it's just like Hooli. You don't want to get... Mm-hmm. By the way, Nucleus, he closed... Oh, I'm sorry. That's a spoiler. Never mind. they also said the Game of Thrones 360-degree video that was put up on Facebook last week has drawn more viewers than any video they've ever shown before. they also said that they will be... They gave an advisory, just as Apple did last quarter, that they can't continue to grow at this pace because pretty soon everybody will be a member of Facebook.
Yep.
But they said this is a way off. This is a way off. Video watching on Instagram up 40% year over year. This is Sheryl Sandberg, the COO, now on the call.
That's incredible. Net income, $1.5 billion, was double what it made during the same period a year ago.
Wow, that's
so
the kind of growth.
A company that size to double. I mean, Apple's the only one I can think of that's done that. It really is mind-boggling.
The addition of Leap Day this year, This is how much money they make. Added 2% to this year's returns. One
it's
extra
single,
day a year.
A single day. Yeah.
Yeah. In relation to last year. So, you know, yeah, we made more this year, but there was leap day. Don't forget. Average, this is a big one. The average price per ad up 5% in the first quarter alone. Impressions up 50%.
Whereas I remember Google's price per ad dropping. Has been going down.
Dropping.
Falling, yeah.
That's that branding versus tactical.
Exactly.
I think you're onto it.
Programmatic.
Yeah.
So, Leo, have they reached out to you to offer to pay you to do Facebook Live?
No, I know, Jeff, you're all in on Facebook Live. How about you?
Oh, God, pay me? No, of course not.
They don't have to pay us. We'll do it anyway because we're publicity whores. So I did buy that Mevo camera that you talked about, Jeff, and we saw that at NAB last week. And
you did? What'd you think of it in person?
It's going to be pretty interesting. It's from Livestream. These guys know what they're doing. I think it's – I haven't got it yet, but the demo is very impressive. You can use an iPad. This is the camera that has 150-degree view, 4K view, but streams 1080p. That means you can use any portion of the screen as the current screen. So it allows with one camera that doesn't move, not only can you switch, and you switch on an iPhone or an iPad, which is wild, but it can also do face tracking. So you can move around – and it will. It's like there's a camera operator. Will pan.
Yeah. How much is it?
$399 now. $399.
Yeah.
Soon.
Wow. That's amazing.
Breakthrough. I'm telling you. There's Facebook Live is a very interesting.
Would you use that for?
Not for shows. I don't think Facebook Live lends itself to the kind of shows we do.
Well, would that camera? Well, that's another discussion because that's interesting. I think there is a chance for interactivity through Facebook Live and new discovery and new audience. And the live part that you've discovered, you know, as just one element, you know, a small element, but an element of the show, I think also works on Facebook Live. But this is a different question. Is the output of that camera, it's designed for Facebook Live, but it didn't have to be for Facebook Live.
No,
right?
No. In fact, you could stream the live stream as well.
Right. So
only those two.
You can record it. And so the question is, it becomes an incredibly cheap location talk show.
Maybe. Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah. We'll see. I'll have to use it.
Yeah, I know. We'll see. But it'll be really interesting.
Yeah.
And for my students, Facebook, to be able to produce a show just using
that. Yeah, I wasn't focusing on that. I mean, I really think the most interesting thing is Facebook Live itself as a platform for broadcast. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's funny because Twitter, in their quarterly results, talked about the Periscope. And I think that I'll have to look at the numbers, but I have a feeling I seem to remember that isn't particularly holding up very well. Facebook's going to eat them alive. And it's funny because they had the first mover advantage Twitter did with Periscope.
Yeah, but they just don't have the scale.
Yeah, they don't have Messenger.
A billion daily users. Yeah, Messenger, WhatsApp. I mean,
they are getting ad revenue. Twitter is getting ad revenue out of Periscope. So,
what if Facebook came to you, Leo, and said, we'll pay you $250,000. I think that's their current offer to some content creators.
Really?
To use Facebook Live. Would you do it?
If you mean exclusively?
I don't think it's exclusive. It says $250,000 for 20 live video posts per month.
What? Who's getting that?
They're paying a lot more than that to BuzzFeed.
Maybe they are. I don't know.
Oh,
for the watermelon videos?
Yeah.
Oh, man, I'm in the wrong business.
If I were Facebook, I would really be reluctant to pay anybody anything.
The argument is they're mimicking the revenue that they presume to get.
Right.
Oh, because you can't put ads in it.
Not yet. When they figure out advertising, they believe that these producers will end up making more, and it's the way to get a critical mass.
Well, see, that would be
an audience.
That would be a problem for me then, because I'd be replacing existing ad revenue.
Right.
Well,
yeah, that's
for
true.
That.
For that. So I might create a new show. I know you were thinking, Jeff, of doing the new show, which, by the way, is currently in beta, the .NYC show out of the CUNY studios. It looked great this morning. The video quality was superb.
Yeah, the guys did a great
job.
Don't
ask us to pay you $250,000, though, for the rights to stream.
Hey, hey.
Let me put it this way. If Facebook comes along and does offer you that, take it. Take it. That's 20 shows a month, though, is a lot. That's 4 shows a week. I mean, five shows a week. That's a daily, basically a daily show.
They don't have to be all shows.
Could just be a post.
Well, I can't imagine people going into their Facebook page and sitting for half an hour to watch a show. Can you? I think it's better for short form, more personal stuff.
No,
I think.
Yeah. A couple things. One is Facebook allegedly is going to leave a video screen on your screen at all times.
Right.
How they do that, well, I'm not sure. But second, I keep on going to the story of Jorge Ramos from Univision, who did four broadcasts from the New Hampshire primary, adding up to 75 minutes, 4.5 million views. Now, how long they were, I don't know. Good point. But people...
Issue of how Facebook counts views.
Right. A view is 3 seconds.
A view is you scrolling by it.
3 seconds.
So I just viewed this video by scrolling by it. I just viewed this video by scrolling by it. Did I get anything out of it? No.
But imagine if there was a sort of video player sitting up in the corner. You could watch a show and be scrolling through your feed at the same time.
Our experience is that we make all of our shows are video and can be streamed live or watched as video later. It's still a fraction of the total audience, unless the show is particularly visual. Most people have time for audio podcasts, but not for video.
Especially with gadgets, there's a big opportunity, though. I mean,
look at what Vox is doing, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because that needs video. You're right. You're right, Stacey, because you want to see that.
Yeah.
Right.
But here's the difference. If you put a gadget video on YouTube, you're going to get such a huge amount of traffic from search.
Mm-hmm.
Will you get the same traffic on Facebook from search?
It depends on who, like if you're a page that has a million people, then probably yes. I mean, we just launched a Facebook page for my stuff and the amplification is really impressive. I mean, and we're starting from a teensy, itsy bitsy base. So if you're like the New York Times or someone, I got to think that you can do super well. What you don't get though is the data. You don't get your user data and you don't know who's watching it. Again, you're basically sacrificing all of that information.
Yeah.
You're going to get great promotion within Facebook.
Yeah. Like, and the only reason we want data is we want numbers for advertising. And I gather we wouldn't, although they've said this is the Vox blog, Circuit Breaker. Mm-hmm. It does have a presence on the Vox, on the Verge homepage.
Here's
what
I learned, Leo. So stay there for a second. Stay with us. Because I read that Vox was going to do a Facebook-only blog. I got all happy. You know, let's try this out, folks in media. I've been arguing to media companies to try this. Vox is ahead of it. They do it. So then I look at it, and I click on something, and it goes to a web page. And I get all upset. I say, what's the big deal? But, of course, I'm an old fart who still uses a thing called a laptop.
Oh.
Yeah. If you use a mobile, no, it is fully in instant articles.
Here's the
funny thing. I had a long conversation with John Herman, now the New York Times, and Twitter about this, trying to get my head around this. Where the problem is, I think, with the architecture of instant articles right now, correct me if I'm wrong, is that it's basically an RSS feed.
There has to be a website.
On mobile, but there has to be a web page for the old farts. And so you don't really experience it totally on Facebook, which I think is kind of silly at Facebook. I think they should create something. But in the short term, that answers your question, at least for that kind of content, Leo, because you end up having to have a website, and that has SEO then.
Yeah, but
they said the focus is basically Facebook.
But it's streamed from Facebook, right?
Custom video that will only exist on Facebook.
Is it streamed from your website or is it streamed from Facebook? It's streamed from Facebook, isn't it?
Yeah, you post it on Facebook. Yeah.
So what you don't get is numbers that have... you get Facebook numbers is all you get, is whatever Facebook deigns to give you.
Which, to my knowledge, so far is nothing.
So that wouldn't be any help at all in selling advertising for us, even if they allow it. And apparently they do allow it, right? Is there ads? Ads?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, there's ads there. And you keep 100% of the revenue if you sell it.
And you can do e-commerce as well. You can do affiliate links.
And you can do video ads there. That's fairly...
Try and imagine the Facebook's 9 billion video views or whatever. Imagine when they do turn on video ads. I'm trying to picture that now. What is going to happen? I mean, the amount of ad revenue is going to be mind-boggling.
Yeah. Well, you'd be nuts not to take advantage of this platform, but you'd also be nuts not to protect yourself because it isn't your platform.
Right.
Right, which is the sort of tension that media companies are wrestling with. They, everyone wants to be on there because you've got access to billions of people, but it's a black box. Facebook gets to control who sees your content and when. The algorithm runs in ways that we don't understand.
So this is a show that was live, essentially a video podcast. I don't see this kind of stuff doing very well. I agree with you, Stacey. If you're showing me, which I don't see them doing, a video of a product, you know, like a Marquez, here's one, a Marquez Brownlee style review. This is the Philips Hue stuff. And they're doing it right, AJ style captioning, even though I don't have the sound turned on, all of that.
Yeah, Kevin and I are looking at doing something like that for, like, as an adjunct to the podcast.
I would.
Because we talk about all this stuff.
Sure.
It's just, I got to learn to edit video.
This is non-trivial video production, I should point out.
Right. That's fancy. But some of that's Philips B-roll, I think.
I think you need...
Oh, sure it is. But still, you have to edit it and put it together and put captions on it.
I think you need to go for a sort of sham wow kind of thing, you and Kevin.
Production values. I think I fit totally in the ShamWow mode. I'm like, yeah.
Well, this is what I kind of think this, in my opinion, what would fit this medium. You have to make your content fit the medium, right? I mean, these should be short. They should be punchy. They should be emotional and interesting, like viral videos in general. Certainly anything, the kind of content I do is not well suited to this at all, if you ask me. I don't care if it's persistent video screen or not. That's not what people want on their Facebook feed. They want viral hits.
But it might become what they want. Yeah, I mean, it's hard to tell what people are going to do with video. I mean, I look at things like Snapchat, and I'm constantly kind of reminding myself that I suck at predicting what people are going to do.
And that's true.
And so I look at things like Snapchat, and I think, no one's ever going to do that. Yeah. And then as it turns out, hundreds of millions of people are going to do that.
If I were Facebook, and Lord knows I'm not that lucky in life, versus the, you know, Google did its European blackmail fund in media, I would do an investment fund where Facebook doesn't own the content because it can't do that. I really believe that. But that says, well, this is basically a venture fund. Come start a new media property on Facebook entirely. You won't have to do production. You won't have to do
you know who
technology,
did that?
Sales.
Anyway. You know who did that? YouTube. How'd that work? How'd that work for you?
Exactly.
Remember that? $100 million.
Yep.
Remember that? They went to brands. They had the YouTube studios. They
didn't work out.
I know.
They gave out $100 million.
That's different. That's right. That was going to big brands trying to do this. I would say.
Well, it wasn't just big brands. It was Geek and Sundry. A lot of people my size did it.
Yeah. The problem was that YouTube didn't have the social layer.
Right.
That Facebook has.
Well, people use Facebook. People live on Facebook. They don't. Well, maybe people do live on. Do they live on?
Well, trolls live on YouTube, leaving horrid comments.
I don't know. My kids live on YouTube, but they know what they're looking at. Too. They're looking at music, right?
Yeah, mine's watching Minecraft videos.
Or Minecraft videos, right?
Mine is too. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Michael, our 13-year-old, will watch Minecraft videos just autoplay through.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's his TV. He never watches TV. I've never seen him watch TV.
My
kids only watch TV years after it's been on TV. So they're currently watching, I think, The Office, like the first year.
Oh, how fun. I envy
bizarre.
Him.
So it's like everything is, I mentioned it at the journalism thing in Perugia. It's like everything has become unstuck in time. So time has no meaning anymore. They're watching shows and videos and listening to music that it might be from 6 months ago, it might be from 5 years ago, it might be, it has no time,
and
has
they
no
don't
impact.
Care.
No.
That's, okay, I'm going to take it back to Twitter just because I feel obligated to, but that's kind of one of the downsides with Periscope on Twitter is it only lives there for 24 hours.
Exactly.
So you're like, oh, crazy.
Oh, I wish I could have seen that. Yeah, but it's over.
Well, Facebook's a stream too. I mean, you don't go, how far down do you go on Facebook?
I don't spend a lot of time on Facebook. I don't know how long their live videos last.
Yeah, I don't know.
They scroll off like Twitter does.
But you can find them.
But the algorithm shows them too.
I would be willing to get. You could find them in other. I mean, I guess you could find Twitter stuff too.
Or you go to the person's page. Right? Yeah. And all their videos.
Okay, if you go to their page, then there's less noise, but still scrolls off. I feel like that's not how people are going to use Facebook. Well, again, I'm probably as bad as you.
Who knows?
You at guessing how people are going to use anything. We're old. But I think that my guess would be that, and this is what we learned on Twitter, by the way, is you don't try to see everything. You just go and you dip in and you dip out. And then whatever's there is there, and whatever's and Facebook knows this. That's why they spend so much time curating the algorithm.
I'm terrible at that. I actually try to scroll back.
That's because you're old.
Yeah, you're a completist.
And I'm kind of
completist,
OCD about like I missed something. What if I missed?
You haven't
gotten
over that yet?
No.
It's like Matthew's value add, though. I mean, if you follow Matthew on Twitter, you're going to know exactly what's happening.
Last week.
All the time.
It's back.
My daughter unfollowed me again. Something.
In fact, don't we get angry when we see stuff we already saw on Facebook? That was last week's meme. What are you talking about the dress for?
Or no, one from 4 months ago.
Well, that's even worse.
Yeah.
But seriously, so that confirms what I'm saying, which is you want the latest. You don't. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
It's like a glitch in the matrix. Like it's the algorithm is glitching somehow.
No, it's because one of your friends reshared.
Well, what does that mean for anyone who's trying to? I mean, I'm just thinking about like creating a gadget review on that. You know, how then do people find the gadget reviews?
That's what I'm saying. That's why YouTube is a better platform for that. And the SEO on gadget reviews on YouTube is very good. You should do reviews. The Philips Hue lights. You won't believe what happened when we turned them on. and the SEO, and actually the SEO doesn't matter about you won't believe what happened. That's Facebooky. What matters is the keywords of Hue lights. People search for, because on Google, you go to Google and you say, I want to know about the latest Sony A7S2 camera. And you're going to see YouTube videos. Actually, I'm not, but normally you would see YouTube videos in a carousel right at the top.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how people find their gadget reviews. That's why gadget reviews on YouTube are so strong right now.
But Facebook, you're at the mercy of the algorithm. They decide whether they show people your clip or not based on criteria we don't understand.
So I just proved myself completely wrong because it's not working.
You picked a really esoteric search.
Okay, I guess so. I guess so. You know, I know what it is. HTC 10 review. How about that? Because that's what people would search for. Now I get The Guardian, and there's YouTube.
Yeah.
And no carousel, though.
No carousel, but that's just weird. But seriously, that's very likely where you're going to go. I don't even care who that is. I may not even know who did this review.
Right.
It's not about brand at all. So,
well, and in a way, that's kind of the problem, broadly speaking, with media right now as a whole. A lot of it comes through platforms like Facebook and Google and Twitter.
Right. That's why
a lot of people have no clue,
right,
who the person is, why they created it, what else they do. These bits of content just show up, and there's no context, and maybe they enjoy them or not. But they enjoy them on the platform, and they don't click, and they don't go to where the thing came from.
Why do you think we do YouTube, but we don't spend any? We don't count on it at all, because that's not for a brand like ours. That's not where the traffic is going to come from.
Right.
It's going to come from people who seek us out by brand, which is probably so old school that we'll die any minute now.
No, it's coming back though. Like it's so old school. That it's probably coming back.
I got some wide
it's like
ties.
80s fashion.
Yeah, I got some great.
Right. It's like flood pants. And because the only way for people to find your stuff is through something approaching word of mouth.
Right.
And maybe that word of mouth comes through other platforms. But the content consumption can't all happen on those platforms or you effectively get nothing.
And that's why I am always really kind of nervous about the power that Google and Facebook wield in this space.
Well, in the lineup, I think there's something about AMP pages showing up in the Google News carousel.
It's gotten worse and worse. Jeff?
That's not worse. That's better. What we need is AMP stuff to start showing up in the carousel. Still bothers me. What I want to see is AMP showing up for the blue links. than anything in news. The FAM should link. It shouldn't.
No,
be, it shouldn't
no,
be
we don't want Jeff. Portion. You're misunderstanding. You don't want that. What this is Google is continuing to do what I was very worried they would do, which is favor AMP content.
Right. They right. favor fast content.
No, they do not. That
now
is
their favorite AMP.
They die because of. Let me try, hear me out here. The problem is that the carousel favors AMP content.
Well, now Google News favors AMP content.
Well, that's another carousel. They just add another carousel to
right.
it all.
Fortunately, Google News isn't important at all. But
is that any fast content should be favored, including blue links?
Well, Google even says fast is nice, but it's not a huge signal for us.
AMP they've got to figure that out. I've said that to them. And
AMP
I've said
is
that
clearly a huge that, signal because they're not favoring fast. They're favoring AMP.
Yeah, and I had this discussion, and I defended Google against that charge of just favoring AMP. And they say, oh, we don't. But de facto, the carousel is AMP.
They do.
And AMP is promoted, and the carousel is promoted. Ergo, yes, Google promotes AMP especially, and they've got to fix that.
And now they're doing it in news, which, you know, was exactly the thing I was worried about, frankly.
Are they doing it on the phone?
To roll out to next step, so they're also going to roll out to blue links.
Actually, it must be doing it on the phone. You're right, Stacey, because I don't see it on my desktop, but... Who uses Google News on mobile, then? I mean, it's...
No, but I'm just thinking about in the Google Now, the stories they promote.
Right.
Those aren't AMP yet. And most people aren't looking...
They will be.
The web. No, I'm saying most people aren't looking on the web.
No.
So
no, Google Now would be a really good place to put it, wouldn't it? Let me just see if we're getting AMP.
Well, yeah, I'm not getting it there. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, I don't see it there.
T-R-U-M-P.
But how long before Google does that, right? That's my problem.
Well, here's what's really going to happen with AMP, Leo. It's again, I've said this before. It's not about news. It's about a faster web. And AMP is going to spread past the news business and past Google News and past everything. And it's going to become a standard for faster web, period.
I hope so. I mean, the best part about AMP is that it's open. I mean, that to me, that's not just a sales pitch. You know, that is one of the benefits compared to, say, Facebook Instant Articles, where Facebook...
So I have a very fast web page because I don't have any ad tech on my web page at all, and we've done everything we can to optimize the web page, blah, blah, blah. Should I have to now go AMP just because I want to be a priority on Google?
That's what I'm saying. Is that
well,
Google
that's
has
BS.
To
a, they
yes,
should
I agree.
Be sued.
Google has to set a speed standard.
That's a monopolistic attitude.
And however you reach that speed standard...
Oh, that's fine.
Oh, yeah.
But that's not what
so
they're
that's
doing.
That's what I'm told they should do.
I'm trying to. I'm reading this article. I'm not clear on whether they have changed it. Originally, it was just based on speed. And so, if you achieve that speed through your own tricks, or you achieve that speed through AMP,
no, not in the carousel. No.
Then you get preferred.
No,
so
you're only
specifically
in the carousel.
AMP.
Is AMP? Yes, because okay. because Matthew, I defend because the accusation was made they were going to favor AMP, and I went to Google, mm-hmm. I went to Gingras, and he said, no,
too.
We favor speed.
Right,
but that didn't count the carousel. Because the carousel was there in the beta days to showcase what AMP could do. Oh, fine.
Yeah.
But now AMP is the sole
gonna be all AMP.
Structure for AMP, and that's not good. That's not what it should be. It should be a standard for speed that you can meet in multiple ways, and AMP is one way to meet it, and then I'm fine with it. And it needs to be a truly open standard with open governments, which they're getting to, but the sooner they get to it, the better.
Well, congratulations, because... According to Ronan, who is at MobiForge, the average web page is now bigger than the download for Doom.
Mm-hmm. The original install file.
The original install for Doom, which was, 2.2 megabytes. That can't be right. Mm-hmm. 22 megabytes is now the average web page has increased in size. This graph goes from beginning of 2011 to the present, to the point where it's crossing that the Doom line.
So funny.
And so what is the total web page
out,
side?
Let's see.
The guy also pointed out the average web page size is shrinking. So it's not growing. That chart you just scrolled past shows.
It's now shrinking. And
it's actually getting better.
The gray are top 10 sites. So it's getting better in the top 10 sites. But the yellow, this is by Alexa rank, which is a questionable ranking. But the yellow is all... sites. So it's only getting better on the top 10 sites.
Right.
Because they're paying more attention. I think he doesn't say, but I think it's 22 megabytes. Does that sound right?
That sounds really, well, really large, actually.
It does, doesn't it?
I'm like, that sounds small. Then I'm like, no, megabytes. That's huge.
Yeah. Wait a minute. Let's see. Why doesn't he say what the average size in kilobytes, 2,250.
Okay, 2.2 megabytes, which fits because.
Oh,
like,
that's better. Okay.
Two years ago, it was one.
You're better at math than I am. Thank
darn
you.
Darn zeros.
I hate zeros.
But that's, I mean, that's epic when you think about like mobile data consumption.
Yeah.
And everything.
Yeah. So that is kind of depressing news. And now you understand.
Do you want some good news?
Yes.
You want to talk about the Comcast data cap expansion?
Cheer me up.
Sure.
Because today Comcast said that they're going to raise their data cap. They hate when we call it data cap, but that it is. They're going to raise it to a terabyte.
From 300 gigabytes.
From 300. When they introduced it in like 2008, it was 250. And then people kept consuming more internet and they were like, we're not going to move it. We're not going to move it. And then they got kind of in trouble for some streaming practices. So they moved it up to 300 and we're like, we're going to try a bunch of different things. And now today, the day after, the FCC was like, yo, Charter, Time Warner Cable merger,
no
data caps for you.
Uh-huh.
So this is big. I'm excited.
Yeah. And a terabyte is probably enough.
I guarantee in a year people will be complaining that a terabyte is not enough.
So the issue really is that Comcast is in the business of selling you premium content over cable. And what they don't like is people buying... downloading premium content over the internet.
Right.
And so you can still, along with this, they raise the cost of unlimited data and they raise the, the overage fees are still $10 for each additional 50 gigabytes.
I think it was 50 for unlimited in one of their trial markets.
Oh, okay. It was, so it says after the June 1st change, this is the Ars Technica article by John Brodkin. After the June 1st change, fewer customers will need to buy limited data, but when they do, it'll cost them $50 a month to do so instead of 30 or 35. So what's happened, of course, is that the cost of internet access has gone up in a clear attempt to make it the same in revenue as buying premium content over cable so that it doesn't matter. And you're a cord cutter, right, Stacey?
I am.
Does it save you money?
Actually, it probably doesn't.
No, I can guarantee you it doesn't. If you watch anything.
Well, we don't watch a lot of TV. But I was just thinking that we're with Google Fiber and everything coming to Austin, we're actually getting not competitive rates on broadband, but they're tossing in over the top TV for like $50 to $60 a month additional, which buying a Hulu, Amazon, and Netflix, I mean Amazon Prime is kind of you would do that anyway, but buying those plus any other shows is kind of like, ooh.
So you are buying though Netflix. You are buying some over the top streaming.
I pay
content.
For Hulu, Netflix, and Amazon Prime, so I get Amazon Video. And I'm actually looking at doing like a Stars or HBO.
Right, HBO Now or
So then, won't that all be the same as cable?
Seems like it would add up. You've got about $30 a month now in over the top fees.
Right, but yes, and my husband subscribes to MLB Live, which is like.
That's really expensive.
It's like $300.
Yeah.
So,
I wonder if you really. I mean, nobody wants to do this math, but I'm sure there's an actuary at Comcast who was doing the math and Tom Warner.
Sure. For sure. And if you buy like shows, but I'm like your kids, Matthew. I watch things out of stream, out of time. I even go to the library and rent DVDs. It's crazy.
What?
I know. Old school. but I'm cheap.
Are you kids little?
I've got a 9-year-old.
Okay. So she's still watching, like, not Barney, but Bambi, maybe.
She would be so insulted. She would roll her eyes at you, Leo.
She's watching Game of Thrones.
She's not.
She is not.
Stacey is a much better mother than that, I can tell you right now.
I'm a good parent. She's watching. She really is. She watches these. I'm astonished by them. These Minecraft videos where it's like Red versus Blue. I don't know if you
Red versus Blue. She watches that. Yeah.
I mean, she doesn't watch actually Red versus Blue.
That's old school, but like Red versus Blue. No, my son, 13-year-old, has been watching those since he was 9. It's dopey stuff. It's like you're watching somebody play a game, and then they're saying
they do their own narration over it. It's so funny.
It's really dopey stuff, but obviously
it's fun to watch.
The kids love it.
Yeah.
Do you enjoy it, Matthew?
I enjoy it sometimes when I see someone like a nephew or. My daughter watching it. I mean, it's totally stupid, but it's not any stupider than the Saturday morning cartoons I used to watch.
I guess you're right.
Actually, it's less like Nickelodeon? Stupid.
Like whenever you're in a waiting room and they've got like the Disney Channel, and
it's pretty dumb, isn't it? Yeah,
it's dumb and it's sexist.
Right.
So
yes,
this may not be sexist, but it probably has got a lot of profanity. It's probably profanity laced.
Well, my daughter is still at 9. She's very.
She's not allowed.
Well, no, I was going to say she's very. I don't know the word.
Judgmental of that.
Judgmental. Yes. Yes. So she's just like
nothing more not judgmental than a 9-year-old.
That'll change.
Yeah, that will. She'll go the other way completely. It's funny, though. I could tell Michael loves it. He chortles. I hear him chortling. Much more than I ever did at Sunday morning or Saturday morning cartoons. I mean,
my older daughter, who's in her 20s, watches Twitch all the time and YouTube videos, and they're all gameplay. So it's all people either playing games or talking about playing games. She watches shows that I have never heard of from the Rooster Teeth Network.
And Rooster Teeth, you know, Red vs. Blue.
Yeah, it's incredible.
I know, that's Machinima. Yeah. Yeah, these guys are very savvy adults making programming
smart
for kids.
I think, I mean, my daughter wants to create her own with her friends. And if you think about Twitch and
this
is like the next generation or the next network for kids, not just for gameplay, but just for like, hey, I'm going to make a cheesy show.
Mm-hmm. Have you seen, there's a girl who's 12, I think. I'm trying to remember her name. And she does a show about games, obviously. Her show, I would watch that show. Mm-hmm. Like, it's not for 12-year-olds per se. It's just for people who love games, and she's really well, like, I don't know if her parents are in, you know, the movie business or TV business, but she's really articulate. It's a great show, and she created it, as far as I can tell, all by herself.
Oh yeah. I'm frustrated because I love Minecraft, but all of the good Minecraft content is in video, which is so hard to consume. I don't want to watch those videos. I just want to read it.
Yeah.
I'm so old fashioned.
They have those books. Bestseller in the elementary school.
I don't want to buy
book
a
bears.
Book. Yeah,
for dummies.
Yeah, I just read the Minecraft wiki. Let's take a break. Come back with more. Stacey Higginbotham is here from Stacey on IoT. Jeff Jarvis, BuzzMachine.com. I thought you might have had a heart attack. I was worried. You'd be very quiet.
Game stuff. I don't.
Crazy.
I got nothing to say.
Game stuff. Yeah. I don't have nothing to say.
Pick
it's like the old days of Twit when you used to say, oh, there's a new monitor out and it has a 476 gigahertz. I would just sit there and wait till it was over.
Well, I'm sorry. Pick a story and you can.
No.
Pick our next story.
I talk way too effing much on this show. So I figure it's good if this gives other people a chance to be heard, and that's good.
Nice.
So no, you should pick topics about which I have absolutely nothing to say. It balances things
all
out.
Right, your turn next, Jeff. Pick a topic.
No, okay? I don't want a turn.
Do you want to go home now, Jeff?
I am home.
Do you want to take a nap?
Yes.
Poor Jeff's had a rough 24 hours. Okay. Also from Matthew Ingram is here from Fortune.com. This is like my favorite panel in a long time. It's really fun. Thank you all for being here. Really great. Our show today brought to you by Texture. If you like magazines, I used to love magazines. In fact, but the problem is it's an expensive habit and it clutters your home. There pretty much is always one article every month in, I was going to say Esquire, but there's never anything I ever want to read in Esquire. However, in Rolling Stone or Wired, you know, there's always one article I always want to read. And then, you know, there's sometimes I like to look at the gossip magazines. I don't want to really buy one, but, you know, if you buy Rolling Stone and Wired and Vanity Fair every month, that's going to cost you like 15, 20 bucks. It's expensive. Oh, you're going to subscribe? Well, the problem is you're subscribing to this magazine for one article a month. That's not it doesn't make sense. Enter Texture. This is Netflix for magazines. You pay one low flat rate, less than 3 magazines a month, and you get them all. You get them all. And you get the whole magazine, everything on the newsstand, even back issues, even bonus features like videos you couldn't put in a magazine. So you want to see the Billboard charts, you don't have to go run and buy Billboard. You just look on your Texture. It goes in your app, on your tablet, on your phone. It is truly awesome. It's just It's everything you want. Plus, you'll find not only are all your magazines there, including The New Yorker and National Geographic, but you'll find stuff in magazines you never heard of or articles you would not have found because their editorial team is putting together top stories and new and noteworthy sections and curating stuff in individual topics so you can go deep dive into something. You could star your favorite magazines. That adds them to your library, downloads them so that you've got them on your tablet before you get on the plane. Men's Health Interview Magazine. Gluten-free living. Popular photography. Shutterbug. It's great. Sound and Vision. Great stereo magazine. It's funny because I love Mother Jones. I just forget about it. And then you see something there and it's great. National Review. I love that too. See, that way you get the left and the right. It's nice. Go to texture.com/twig. There's the purple rain cover on the New Yorker. Wow. Go to texture.com/twig. And right now, you're getting a free trial. You'll see exactly what it's like to subscribe. Highly recommend it. All the best magazines. One low rate. Binge read the same way you binge watch. texture.com/twig. Jeff, is there anything that interests you?
Oh, there's so much.
I know. Google search results are going to have TV listings. That's good.
I like that. Do you use can you imagine using your phone as the remote?
I do.
Yes.
You do use
it? I do.
Yeah, I do too.
So Android TV does that, and now iOS has an Android TV remote app, which is nice. I also use the Apple TV remote app. It's much better on the phone than the app is. And sometimes you lose the remote, but you never lose your phone. You always know where your phone is. I have remotes for I even have remotes for like my Onkyo AV receiver. I have all sorts of stuff in here. I like my remotes. Also, I have a whole folder of remote software.
Oh, wow.
I know, that's crazy.
Isn't that a pain, though? Because then you've got to get your phone, you got to get your software.
Go to the folder.
Well, I'll use the remote if I've got the remote there, but it's nice to have kind of a guaranteed access because there's nothing worse.
Than getting up and changing something?
Yeah. Don't you hate that? No. There's nothing worse than wanting to get up and change something and not being able to. Right? You're stuck watching what's on because you can't find the remote.
That's a real problem.
All right, I watch a lot of TV. Please don't judge me.
I'm not channeling my inner 9-year-old.
I love the culture.
Hey, Stacy, I was going to ask you about. I think this is in the lineup. When Nest said it was going to deprecate Revolve?
The Revolve. I'm trying to remember
the name. Oh yeah.
Do you have any thoughts on that?
Did you not read my Medium post?
I want to hear what Stacy said. I did read your post.
So I think it's a black eye for the industry.
Yes.
I think they could have handled it much better. I talked to a bunch of people to find out how they sunsetted their devices. The options out there right now are creating like escrow for your code and open sourcing it. They did that for, I can't think of the device right now. They've done it for a couple devices. And then you've got these like diehard engineers who work with it and they'll keep supporting
it. SmartThings did that. They moved to a new hub. But they didn't kill the old hub.
They didn't kill the old hub. SmartThings is kind of a wacky situation right now because they had some issues. But there's a couple things. They didn't communicate well with their users. They didn't say, hey, we're sorry. This is going to happen. When they originally did the deal, they didn't say they were going to shut it down. When they decided to shut it down, they didn't actually tell everybody. I had a Revolve as a review user. And I actually didn't get a notice from them until like 2 days after all the kerfuffle started. So whatever notification they were doing was really wretched, which is why everyone was pissed. And I understand why they had to kill it. It's just the way they communicated it, the way they refused to open it up. All of those things are kind of just stupid. It's arrogant.
The other thing I liked about this piece is it revealed that Stacy has a bizarre penchant for weird connected devices, like the Berg printer.
Oh, that was the one that was open sourced. If you go to GitHub, there's still you can if you have
you could
a Berg
still
printer,
use it.
Theoretically, you have to work really hard.
Do you have to know how to use Git? That's the only problem. But if you can clone a Git rip depository and build from source, you're golden.
Well, there you go.
They actually, there's a couple people who are really very helpful on the little printer chat board. I was looking at them and I'm like, wow, they're walking like 30-year-old people who have no tech experience through this. And
what is this Berg little printer? What is this thing?
So Berg was a design consultancy and they built this thing. You basically went in online and you filled out like, oh, I want articles from The Guardian. I want Instagrams. I want this and this. And then like every day it would print out those things for you.
Unlike groceries ribbon.
It's totally like a wallpaper kind of thing. Like in terms of the
I kind of like it. I wish I had one. I like it.
Well, you probably could buy one real cheap.
And it still works because they open. See, this is, by the way, what Revolve totally should have done is they should have open sourced the server and let somebody run the server.
There's a Japanese word for objects that are
kawaii,
kind of useful,
otaku,
but kind of dumb. I'm trying to think of it. So this fits like that. That word would fit.
Kind of bizarrely fascinating.
I mean, it's sort of useful, but.
It was a concept, but so this is kind of an interesting issue, and I bet it's going to come up again because Staples, which actually launched their own hub, I think in 2013, I'd have to double check when they did it, but they're actually about to make an announcement about that hub, and I'm really curious how they're going to handle it because they've got probably, last I saw they had about, I'm going to say about 50,000, but that was at like CES in 2015. So if you think 50,000 Staples Connect Hub customers are suddenly about to to hear the fate of their home hub. Yeah. So
what happened? What happened with Revolve? The last we heard, we talked about it a few weeks ago, was that Nest was going to give kind of refund some people their money.
Case by case. They didn't sell a lot of Revolves. They sold less than 10,000 of them. Yeah. So they were expensive, though, really expensive. So that was kind of the thing. That's the last we've heard of it, other than the meme.
I don't think it would be so hard to keep a server running for, let's say, 1,000.
The issue there, users. There's a couple issues. Because it connects to so many other devices, when someone else's integration changed, some person would have to go change that. And from a security perspective, they've got to keep,
right.
I mean, this is a huge issue for the Internet of Things. I mean, Revolve, I'm sad. Nest had a chance to really show the industry how to do something and they just
screwed it up.
And haven't fixed it since. I found the words, right?
I found the Japanese word.
Oh,
It's chindogu.
Chindogu.
And it means...
So chindogu.
It means useless accessory. So it's a cool object that does something but is mostly useless.
There are so many chindogu things in this business.
I have so many of them, like, in my house.
I want to make a note. Note to self. The chindogu podcast. The chindogu show.
So great.
This work, this word week in chindogu.
How it takes 5 minutes to come up with a word. I think it's called age.
Wait, no, Matthew's been Googling it since he mentioned
it. Yeah, I have. It's true.
But it's just a simulation for what you're going to go through in older age, Matthew.
It's like Japanese useless.
Wednesday.
Actually, I may be too late. There is an official Chindogu Society.
Yeah. Oh, my. It's a big deal.
Uh-huh. Home of the International Chindogu Society. They even have the Chindogu of the day. The hay fever hat.
It's a great concept.
I don't know why the image links are broken, but apparently this would be a great thing to have come out of your Berg little printer every day. The Chindogu item for the day.
So there's one. I just found one. It's a helmet that you wear on the subway, and it has a suction cup that sticks to the window. And so it keeps you from falling forward when you fall asleep.
I would do that for an airplane. That would be amazing. Like Velcro on the back?
It actually looks like a plumber's friend on the back, actually.
Yeah, it does. Yeah.
I think this is
here's
now
the image.
As,
many of them are homemade, I think.
The American version is Kickstarter.
Kickstarter is the Chindogu Society of the United States. Absolutely. I bought, for instance, Perfect Chindogu. The floating bonsai tree. I wonder if they got funded. I think they did, because I think they took money out of my account.
Floating bond.
So it's water? Yeah, it's called Air Bonsai. It is a bonsai tree that uses it floats in the air.
What?
Magnets?
Very good. Stacy has obviously spent some time in the world of Chindogu. It is a magnet powered device. And thank goodness, here they are, floating bonsai trees. They are now a reality.
Wow, and of course, floating speakers.
Made in Japan. I'm so excited about this. Mine should come any day now.
There's a good one.
That's one I have. I own.
That's the one. Yeah.
The ostrich pillow.
I think you wore it on the show.
The ostrich pillow. Yeah.
I have it. Okay. One little note. If it leaks, and it did spring a leak, that's not good.
That would be bad.
Tiny little staticky foam pellets. Just now, what could go wrong though with a floating bonsai tree? I think that this is going to be good forever. Okay, just rotates in space.
What a weird place.
What if it grows off its axis?
Shut up. don't bring up problems that don't exist. Physics. Damn you, physics. I'm trying to buy... We're all distracted now. I'm on eBay trying to buy Chindogu. A Berg little printer.
Oh.
I'm looking at Chindogu.
If we're distracted, what's our audience doing?
They're like, show us more weird, crazy gadgets.
Yeah. I'm telling you, the Chindogu show. This should be the Chindogu show. I want to do that.
I think it already is.
Yeah, I think it's devolved
a little
into
bit,
that.
A little bit.
Anything to say about Twitter?
Yeah. I mean.
The Verge's article kind of said it all. Nothing Twitter is doing is working.
Well, that's the weird thing, though. I didn't write about it, but if I had written about it, I would have said some things worked. So they added users for the first time.
That's right.
In like a year.
5 million new users.
That was the last thing that everyone was beating up on them about, right. Including me.
Yeah, but it's only 5 million.
So they figured out how to add new users. But then, so it reminds me of someone spinning plates. So they get one plate going and then... another plate falls to the ground and they have to start it again. So they got new user growth working.
Right.
But now revenue's fallen off the table and next quarter revenue will be substantially lower than they thought because they're moving people, like their advertisers are moving to video ads. And so they're not getting as much revenue from things like promoted tweets. So it's like the target keeps moving, you know, the goalpost keeps moving.
And Periscope continues to shoot sideways video, which really didn't help the earnings call. Which
it was upside down last time. If you remember the last earnings call, it was upside down. So it's actually getting better. It's gotten one next. Sort of rotation better.
I was like, next time it'll be right.
Next time it'll be perfect.
It's 45 degrees better every time. And that's all we care about.
I actually thought it was a joke. The last call, when it was upside down, I thought someone was pulling my leg.
They're just dead holding their phone wrong. They're literally holding it wrong.
Yeah.
This is a good line from Jack Dorsey. Asked about Facebook, Dorsey said, "We've been doing live for 10 years. We believe we have leadership potential." He meant leadership position, but maybe that was a Freudian slip.
Could have been a contender.
He had potential. I could have been somebody. Instead of a two-bit punk, which is what I am.
Talk about their deal with is it the NFL? I'm not a sports ball person.
Yes.
So did they talk about how that worked?
Oh, they
no, they said they want more of them, though. So they're going after other sports as well.
It was a remarkably good deal, $13 million for 13 games, right?
But yeah, because they're effectively just rebroadcasting.
Right.
So this is very clever of the NFL. The NFL effectively sold the same rights that they sold to two broadcasters. They sold them again to Twitter.
You know what we say. It's incremental income.
And I don't understand. So we were talking about Facebook Live and whether that's the way people are going to use Facebook. Is someone going to watch a whole football game streaming on Twitter?
Yeah, it's a link. It's a link.
No, it's
so,
not a
so
link.
You watch it on, it's, well, but you know what I'm saying? It's it that's the equivalent of what it is. It doesn't fit into the experience of Twitter in a way that you might as well. You're just it takes over your screen and you watch it. How is that Twitter?
It could be so awesome though for just, if they did tools for like instant GIFs or like being able to chunk segments out, like almost editing. I don't think the NFL is going to ever do something like that, but that's like, that would tie into how people share things.
Right.
Kind of
Definitely. Yeah, definitely. And you
that's
know,
that same thing is you got to be native to the platform. It's what I was saying
Giphy
about Facebook.
Doing that. So Giphy, I wrote about, Giphy raised a bunch of money. They've effectively created a content studio. They're the ones who do a lot of
that's
the GIFs
interesting.
For sports wow. leagues and for TV shows.
Oh, that is interesting.
So they're effectively gififying everything.
It's a, you know, it's a consumer product because it's a keyboard, but it's all free. It's you know, you can embed GIFs on various messaging platforms. But the money, like BuzzFeed, the money is in making GIFs,
right.
social GIFs
right.
for brands.
So they have teams of people who
wow.
go and help the morons who run the Oscars create GIFs of their content. And now they're effectively building a content studio that will just gifify everything.
I bet
so they'll
you
be producing
movie stars would pay them to make, you know, like here's the Channing Tatum. Can I at least give you an awkward hub GIF? Very useful, right? And that
yeah.
that's evergreen, man.
Right.
Definitely.
I got to think like Jimmy Fallon has like a GIF master, right? Just pulling stuff.
He's
from
got
the show.
To.
Sure.
Hey, can we talk about talk show?
Okay, let's talk sure. about talk show, but let's take a break and then talk about talk show. How about that?
Sounds good.
Because we're getting up on the 2 hour thing, and I don't want you to turn into pumpkin. But while I'm doing this ad, Stacey, you might want to run and tell your daughter to dust off the Gear VR because you can now play Minecraft on the Gear VR in 3. There
what?
You go. Oh. Look at that. Oh,
that's
baby.
That's pretty cool, actually.
I can't wait. I'm going home and doing that. That's what I'm doing tonight. My wife gets mad at me when she sees me wearing the Gear VR. She thinks I'm watching porn, but I'll tell her, no, honey, I'm mining. I'm harvesting my wheat.
It's Minecraft porn.
It is kind of. That's awesome. You have to buy it, though. It's an additional $7.
Calera.
Get out of here.
That's I bought it instantly.
Yeah, I will. I'll go home and buy it tonight. Of course, Galaxy phone not included. Our show today brought to you by ZipRecruiter. If you're in the business of hiring, whether you're a sole proprietor or you're the HR person, you have my respect. You have the most important job in any company is building the company. A company is made of the people who work there, and it could be a great thing or a bad thing depending on who you hire. It's also the most challenging because how do you find that right person? Where are they? Where do they lurk? You'd think the internet would help, but there's hundreds of job sites. How do you get your position on all the job sites? You do it with ZipRecruiter. With one click of the mouse, you post to 100-plus job sites, including all the social sites like Twitter and Facebook and LinkedIn. And this is the beauty part. You're gonna reach the largest number of people possible. And you might say, I don't want that because that means a lot of calls and emails. No, they go into the ZipRecruiter interface. So you don't get calls. You don't get emails. You just get great candidates. And you can go through them fast, screen out the ones that don't fit, rank the rest, hire the right person fast. They'll even start filling up your inbox, your ZipRecruiter interface, almost instantly because they have more than 6 million current resumes on file. See, a lot of people go to ZipRecruiter to get a job. ZipRecruiter.com and their unique mobile apply process means you're even reaching new employees on their smartphones, on mobile, you know, and honestly, that's the way to get to them. Optimized pages look great on any screen. They have an application process just for mobile. You'll find candidates in any city, in any industry, anywhere in the country. It's the easiest way. No wonder almost 1 million businesses now have used ZipRecruiter. More than 100 million candidate applications have been delivered. And it's easy and it's fast. And right now it's free if you go to ZipRecruiter.com/twig. 4 days free. That's enough to really get a sense of what it's like and probably even find that perfect employee. ZipRecruiter.com/twig. So talk show is an interesting idea. I don't know if I would ever use this.
That was my question for you guys.
Yeah.
Y'all seem
it's
smart.
Like a group chat, sort of a public group chat.
Well, it comes from the insight that what you see, and you see it on Instagram and Facebook and a lot, you see people's private text conversations, which they've screenshot and put on there. Like here's, as an example, this is from the Sippy's Medium article, a chat between Taylor Swift and Ed Sheeran. Okay, just the fact that you can look over the shoulder and see what Tay-Tay and Ed are talking about is cool. And then it's so cute. Go to sleep. I'll talk to you soon, says Tay-Tay. Ed says, in a bizzle swizzle. She says, like you said, Ed. He says, that's okay, Tay. And then the punchline, you'd think for multi-platinum lyricists, we'd do better. That's on Instagram, on Taylor Swift's account. Well, imagine, if you will, a messaging app that simplifies the process of saying funny things and then making them public.
But that is Taylor what this is.
That's what this
is. Would Taylor and Ed Sheeran ever do that?
Well, I'm sure they're hoping. So
their right. publicists might have them do it if it's a big deal. I mean, that's what I'm curious about. I'm like, who is this aimed at? Is it like Snapchat and I'm just too old to understand why this matters? Because they talk about it like it's a podcast kind of thing, mm-hmm. just these quick moments.
Like you would have a show, yeah.
But
I don't, I mean, so it feels to me as though, I mean, that happens on Twitter, right? We see people having conversations or arguments mostly on Twitter, and we all get to watch.
That's kind so of, I like, think, what this is, right? This is a...
But it's invite only, right? So then only some people would be able to see it.
No, you share it publicly if you want.
You share it, yeah. Okay. And it's iOS only, though, so far, I think. Yeah.
So anybody on the app would be able to see
it. So if you go to the home screen of the app, which I haven't installed. I don't have an iOS device here. Somewhere I must have one. You will see, just like Periscope, you will see promoted talk shows.
I mean, it feels to me as though unless you're going to get a bunch, like unless Taylor Swift and Ed Sheeran and a bunch of others are going to start using it, what's going to pull people into that network? They've
sexting.
Already got 15 different chat apps.
Sexting. How long before it goes to sexting?
Public sexting?
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah, it'll be like the chat roulette.
Yep. How long before that?
You think?
Yeah, everything gets there sometime.
So I'm not saying it's not interesting. I'm saying, is it going to be a service that people will actually use? I don't know.
I think the only reason it's getting any attention is because of Michael Sippy, right?
Okay. Yeah, I was very curious about
he was with Twitter. Well, he was VP of product at Twitter.
Yeah, and he's a smart guy, and it's well-designed from what I can tell. I'm just not clear on how the use case is different enough from lots of other things.
So a trend is any two things that we see, but I've seen a company in stealth, so I can't talk about it, but from an old friend that also tries to fix Twitter in interesting ways. I think that's a really interesting there's something about Twitter that's out there that's not working, and Twitter's not fixing itself. And so are there opportunities to start a new Twitter and fix it?
Do you remember Branch?
Not as the old, I don't mean that.
Do you remember Branch? Well, it was a similar idea. It was to take conversations into a different place because Twitter wasn't the best place to do that.
That was a little highfalutin. Brilliant guys. It was a little highfalutin. Let's have a serious conversation here. As opposed to, hey, Tay.
It was invite only.
Big difference.
Which was one of our problems.
This feels kind of like Vines, but it also feels like not organic at all, which texting feels so, mm-hmm. like a conversation is kind of organic. So do you am I like, Matthew, hey, let's do a talk show
let's
about
have
the
a
media
show.
Industry.
Right,
exactly, Stacey.
I don't know. I mean, again, going back to my inability to tell whether something is going to be dumb or massively huge. I mean, it could actually fit some sort of market desire. It could fit a need that people have to do something quasi public that's like chatting, but not just them. I don't know. To be honest, I don't.
Well, Facebook actually, didn't they just add like a group messenger or something?
They did,
I just got stuck on like this, it's like being on conference call or something awful, or a group text.
See, that's the downside. Yeah. I mean, you get added to those things. I got added to group DMs randomly. And Yeah, it's horrible.
Do you think so that people, children, younger people who grew up typing on a phone, not us, obviously, because it's only a few years old, but are more comfortable with typing on a phone than we are? I mean, I find that just a very painful
definitely
way to communicate.
Oh, yeah.
But maybe they love it.
That's all my daughters do.
Right.
And Snapchat and texting is, in fact, our youngest, who's 18, was Snapchatting me responding to a Snapchat that she had shown me that was of her mother. So it's like meta levels of Snapchat are happening simultaneously. And then other people are texting her on Snapchat about the thing that she just shared. So I can see if messaging becomes the sort of main way in which you interact, period, then maybe something like talk show makes sense.
I think it's a non-starter. But seriously, I don't think anybody paid any attention if it weren't sippy. Jeff, you want to feel old?
Yeah,
the Verge is going all squee about this 1993 HD footage of New York. It's just like being in New York in 1993.
That ancient time. Right,
oh, my God.
Oh, man.
It's like
these people didn't have a web yet.
It's just like today.
They look like it, too.
Yeah, they look bored.
They're all looking forward instead of at their phones. Look at that.
Oh, that's that's a good point.
That is a very good.
They're not looking at each other, and there's the World Trade
Center. No, it's New York.
They're not looking at each other. Let's not assume there's any intimacy involved. Now, thankfully, they have something to look at instead of just staring into the distance.
There's WTC5.
Wow. Jeff knows that area. This looks like Battery Park. I'm not sure. Anyway, fascinating. And like the Verge,
Stacey hit the right observation on this one.
Yay!
Have you seen the historical photo? The caption is "I hate this modern technology that's getting in the way of people communicating," and it's men on a train car reading the newspaper, and everyone's reading a newspaper.
Jeff, you spend some time on the train. I imagine that you used to read the newspaper.
Way back.
Oh, then. That's what you pick up when your phone battery dies, right?
Yeah.
So back to Stacey's point, have you seen the story from Augsburg, Germany, where they're putting stoplights in the sidewalk so that if you're looking down at your phone, you're going to see you shouldn't walk. Mm-hmm.
They actually should have it, like, using like Google's physical web or something, they should beam it to your phone. You get a notification, walk now. The technology is getting there.
Oh, yeah, they could just do it in the phone. Who needs that way I don't ever look up.
Exactly.
Didn't someone, there was software you could get that would effectively make your phone transparent. It used the camera and showed you what was behind
augmented
the phone.
Reality.
Right. VR,
so that you wouldn't walk into things.
Yeah. Here it is. It's not really traffic lights. It's just, and it's so people don't walk onto the train tracks. So actually that's probably.
Which is probably a good idea.
Yeah.
They could use
it turns red when you shouldn't walk.
Right. God, if you're looking at your phone and walking onto train tracks, you really
it
are. That's Darwin at work. I think that's.
It happens.
I think maybe
because
natural.
The most amazing thing about the Germans is how they really don't walk. They don't jaywalk.
No.
There could be no car in sight, not for 2 years.
Nobody's going to move.
I don't care.
They're a very
if it
orderly
says don't
people.
Walk, they don't walk.
Yeah. They're kind of like Canadians in that regard.
Yeah. Although Canadians, particularly in Toronto. Do they?
No, we walk all over the place.
Oh, no, not like New York.
Not like New York.
Yeah, New York.
Yeah. No. Nobody does it like New York.
I got a ticket for jaywalking in Austin, so.
What?
I know, when I was in college. Oh. It was crazy. I was sober, too. It was just for jaywalking.
I just wanted to meet you, Stacey. I don't think it had anything to do with jaywalking.
When I lived in Edmonton, if you even approached the edge of the roadway and looked as though you might go out into the road, not at a crosswalk, not even at a stoplight, but in the middle of the road, cars would come to a halt.
Oh, yeah.
Just in case you might want to cross.
That's very polite. Canadians are very polite. That's how it's supposed to be in California, by the way.
Yes. Used to be.
It used to be. It did used to be. People were really very good about not running you over. God, that guy fell right off the platform. Just pay attention. That sounds bad.
Yeah, that doesn't look staged either.
No, that looks real. Tip your Uber driver.
Mm.
They don't get tips. I thought they were getting tips.
I knew they got paid, but they got to do it like Lyft does and put it in the app.
It's not, and they won't. Exactly. Uber says we're not going to put it in the app.
That's just pissy.
But thanks to the consent decree that Uber has made with the FTC, drivers now can put signs up that say, I don't get a tip, please tip me.
That was the whole shtick was, I do now, but I didn't realize that, so I feel like a schmuck from way back in the days.
Me too.
Yeah.
Because I never tipped. I thought, oh, you're getting tipped. I just get out of the car. It's all
it was like the old black cars, yeah.
Well, and one of the benefits of the for me at least, one of the benefits was just not having to carry money and not having to get out your wallet and not having to just get out.
That's why Lyft is so much better. You just tip afterwards.
Yeah.
Right. Well, and isn't Uber testing also in some areas like where they won't wait as long for you as well and they'll just drive off?
Wow.
I don't know if you guys saw that. It's like they've changed the point in time where a driver can leave from 5 minutes to 2 minutes, and they're piloting that in certain cities.
Oh, wow.
2 minutes. And
2 minutes, which, I mean, I usually wait outside for my Ubers unless I'm in like a dodgy area, but that's really tough because I can see my drivers just being like, ah, crap, I can't find her because, you know, they're across the street or down the block. And
well, when you're in New York and there's an Uber car, every third car is an Uber, it's kind of hard to know which car is yours. I've spent a lot of time looking in saying, Leo?
But it tells you what model. It tells you the model.
They all drive the same car. In black.
I almost get in.
Oh, the black horse. Oh, I see. I'm a man of the people. I take the Uber X.
That's why I don't
lift. In San Francisco, I almost got into this guy's car. Like, I was waiting for an Uber. And it wasn't an Uber. It was just his car. But he was driving a whatever, a town car or Marquee, and I opened the door, and he's like, what are you doing?
That's why I thought the pink mustaches were a good idea.
Seinfeld episode, Matthew, I think.
Yeah, it was bizarre.
There'd be a modern Seinfeld episode. Yeah. Getting into, and then driving off.
We need a new Seinfeld, not to get back to TV, but we do need a new Seinfeld because the mores and times have changed, and now all the things to whine about are very different.
Well, and better yet, all of the plot points that would be ruined by a cell phone.
Right.
Right. I was going to say, if you read Twitter, basically that's Twitter's moneymaker. They should license our content, I guess, and create the next Seinfeld. Because if you scroll through Twitter, that's basically what it is.
People bitching and whining. First world problems. Yeah.
First world problems.
First world problems. This is the show of first world problems, ladies and gentlemen. I thank you so much for joining us. Let us wrap it up with some picks or tips or tools or numbers. Would you like to start with a number, Jeffrey?
Yes, I would. And I think, how can I start with any other number but 2, as in episode 2 of .NYC.
Yay!
Our beta of the new attempt at a Twitty show in New York at CUNY. And so today we had a wonderful show with our first co-host, Julia Furlan, who was just great, who's from BuzzFeed. And Don Barber and Javier Molina on VR, and it was jam-packed. And then we also had Dan Dubno with his gadgets. So we talked about the news. We're trying to figure out the forum and all that.
The only issue with the title is that there is a .NYC website. It's the New York City Department of Transportation.
I know, but what name is not going to be taken?
No, that's true. So how can we find this without going to the NYC DOT?
Well, the thing is, until it gets out of beta, you guys won't put it up on the feeds, but it is on YouTube.
Okay.
So the link is there. I don't know what you search for. It's under .NYC show.
Okay.
And the link is on the rundown. And so I'm eager for feedback. As I say, be nice, be constructive. We're just trying this out.
And you streamed this this morning on the Twitch.
Live feed.
Is this going to be your regular time? Is Wednesday?
No, we don't know what our regular time is going to be yet.
Okay. Looks so good. That studio, really. You know what? I think you should stay in that studio. I really feel like that looks great.
Ugh, whiplash, Leo. Jesus.
Well, you could do whatever you want. But that actually, I'm pleased at how that looks. The lighting's great. And it's you know, I mean, nobody watches video anyway. It'll be... It'll be audio, so it doesn't really matter.
Well, it sounds very good, yeah.
It really does look great. I'm very pleased. And by the way, that's the stream that we got here. So that's another thing that's working well, I think.
Yeah.
So how? So I guess if we follow you on Twitter, we'll know.
We'll figure it out as we go. Yeah, until June, we don't have all of our equipment, and my schedule's weird. And we're doing all kinds of different things.
Yeah.
But so we're trying. I'm going to go to the DLD conference and try to do some stuff from there. We're just going to try different things for a few weeks, and then see what we like, and try out some co-hosts, and get a regular rotating crew of co-hosts, so that I don't screw it up with my schedule, and you have somebody more interesting and younger and more fun than me. And but it's fun. It's exciting.
And you're going to cover New York City startup scene. How would you describe
startups, tech, the intersection of tech in New York with being the center of the universe. How it intersects with news and media, obviously, but also with fashion and finance and advertising and whatever the hell we want.
Good. All right. Yeah. Unfortunately, we haven't got a YouTube channel. You can't just go to youtube.com/.nyc for some reason. It's like maybe because you have to have 500 likes first or something. Some YouTube has
weird handed rules. The channel, I think, over to you or something.
No, we have admin, but you own it. I'm just not sure how we get to it in YouTube. You can't just search for .nyc. Oh, yeah, you can. So if you go to youtube.com and do a search for .nyc, you'll have to scroll down all the Department of Transportation stuff. But look
for .nyc show.
Look for a red dot. Let's see if you search for .nyc show. Yeah, it's the first thing that comes up.
There it is.
.nyc/show, and you will find it. And you could subscribe, and the more people who subscribe, the more likely we'll be able to get a good URL.
So you can find us only in YouTube for now, only live. That'll be, that was, 10 o'clock our time, 7 a.m. your time, and you had people there, which was very nice of you.
Yes.
And so we'll be on YouTube for a few weeks, and then we'll join in the feeds, presuming we don't embarrass you. But I'm honored to be working on a new show. We are from CUNY. We thank you. And it's great. So we're starting.
Can't wait.
At some point, we'll put up. We did a first show last week, and there was some confusion. It wasn't really on Facebook Live. We were just playing with that. We have a real show with real recording with me debating Emily Bell.
Oh, I want to see that. Yeah, because the Facebook audio is coming from your phone.
Yeah, that was just for the fun of it, so we could refer to Facebook Live.
Right.
We recorded a real show, and in the same studio with the same sound and the same lights and the same goodies, though more comfortable chairs. And we Emily and I debated Facebook good or evil. So that's fun.
StacyOnIoT.com is where you'll find Stacey Higginbotham, and I hope you'll find her here a lot more often.
Possibly.
Do you
want a tip?
Yeah, I want a tip.
All right. This is for people who are interested in the smart home and are kind of like, holy cow, I want to do a bunch of things and I want them all to work together. There's a website called Smart Home DB, and that is a great place to go to actually, I go and check like, hey, is this Zigbee compatible? Is this Z-Wave compatible? It's very handy.
So is your house like totally wired and everything? You talk to it?
Yes.
I can talk to it. I can also give you a... This is a tip that requires you to have kind of a bunch of things or three things. So
I have a SmartThings hub, Hue lights, an Echo, of course. Actually, four Echoes.
That is a lot of Echoes.
That's a lot of Echoes.
Wow. I've got an Echo and a Dot, and I felt
one of the Echoes is a Dot, so that does that. No, I'm sorry. I have four Echoes and a Dot. I'm sorry.
So here's a tip for you. If you've got an Echo and you have an app called You Know Me on your phone.
Okay.
That'll connect with your Hues, your Echo. I can't remember Wemo. I think Sonos. So you can use it.
Oh, Sonos.
Actually.
Oh,
yeah,
oh,
so,
oh.
Everyone's like, Sonos. So the caveat on that is that the Sonos stuff, it will only play like what's been playing. And I think you can play from your favorites. Okay. So that's the thing. So you're like, I won't say her name to upset your audience, but Echo, turn on, it's a You Know Me skill. So no, it's actually, I'm trying to remember now how I activate
it. It's Yo Know Me, right? And Y-O-N-O-M-I.
Yes.
Okay.
But the thing I was going to say, because this is actually really useful, if you have the Logitech Harmony connected hub.
I have that too. Yeah.
Okay. So use You Know Me to set up your like Netflix
what
stuff.
What don't you have?
Like, Echo, turn on Netflix and chill. And then all of a sudden all your Harmony stuff will come in through that to the Alexa or the Echo. Isn't that awesome? Play with it. It's amazing.
And it all starts with You Know Me.
Why don't you want to say Alexa?
Because it triggers it. Stop it.
Yeah. I didn't want to be a jerk. Stop it. Next, you're going to talk about Game of Thrones spoilers.
Everybody thinks that's so fun, except the people who have Echoes. Don't do that either.
Okay, Google.
That's a good tip. I'm going to get this app. I have all the stuff, and it's all disconnected.
Yeah, so the nice thing is you set up the rules in that app, and you can call it. You don't have to call it Netflix and Chill. But
I'm going to call it Netflix and Chill. Hells yeah.
There you go.
Maybe Game of Thrones and Thrill. Do you have anything for us, Matthew Ingram?
You know, I've been racking my brain trying to think. All my gear is so old compared to you guys. I have nothing that's smart in my home, including me. I have no smart objects. I have a couple of dumb cats.
Do you have an Android app you like or anything like that?
They're all old, though. Nothing you probably know about all of them. Yeah. I think I mentioned Anmade Share, which I really like, which allows you to share, set up your own share lists so you can share something to multiple things.
I need something that will let me post to all the social networks.
That's what I do. When I'm saving something, so let's say I click a link on Twitter, I save it to Instapaper. So this is where the OCD comes in. I save it to Instapaper. I save it to Pocket. I post it to a Flipboard magazine that I curate about media, which you should subscribe to. And I sometimes post it to Facebook and to Twitter. So I can do five things all at once. And then it makes it easier to do multiple things. So you don't have to go to if this, then that, and set up scripts and all that.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice. I'm going to subscribe to your media Flipboard right now.
You should.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
Somebody's suggesting, instead of, Game of Thrones and Chill, we just say winter is coming. And then winter comes.
if you've got a nest, you can just take
a cold.
The heat will go down, yeah.
Turn the thermostat way down.
Let's take it literal.
This is an app, Android or iOS, that Johnny Jett, our travel guy, told me about on the radio show, and I just love it. How many times are you in a plane, you're flying over something, you look out the window and go, I wish I knew what that thing was, that body of water, that mountain, that strange shape that looks like crop circles. Well, this app is called, aptly, Flyover Country, and it's from the University of Minnesota. It is such a great idea, and actually it's geoscience-focused, although it will tell you all sorts of landmarks. So what you do is you draw a line on the as you're about to go on a flight, you draw a line on the map. Here, I'll show you on my phone. You draw a line on the map, say, oh, I'm going to be flying from here to here. And then it will save, I actually threw Hawaii in by accident, it will save all the map data. And now, even though you're in airplane mode, you got leave your GPS on, obviously, you will have a map with points of interest. Mm. And even better, if you look at the website, like geographic stuff, like geologic stuff, like you're floating over glacial drift rock, it's unconsolidated coarse dendritic lithology about 2.5.
Your GPS works in the phone and it's not illegal or anything?
It's not illegal to have a GPS on. You don't have the Wi-Fi or the Bluetooth on.
Waiter, they showed you dinosaurs?
They show you dinosaurs.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Isn't this cool? The Theropoda was right down there as you...
I said that to myself flying back from Italy. I said, I wish I had a thing.
Right.
That would show me what I'm flying over.
Right. Isn't that so cool? You can't. I've done it before with maps like the Here Maps that store offline. You can't. The reason, and I guess if you could use the Wi-Fi in the plane, you could do it, although it'd be very slow.
I was not on plane Wi-Fi.
Yeah, it's better just to have it pre-downloaded, and then it'll all be there. This is actually from the University of Minnesota Geoscience Department.
What's the name again, Leo?
It's called Flyover Country, and you can find it on, there it is, Flyover Country Fly Map. Now, it's U.S. only, but they are planning to expand it internationally as well. So they're adding more maps all the time. It's really cool.
My favorite is when I flew from, for example, once South Africa, you're going over lands that, wow, what's that?
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And I always want to know this stuff. This is funded by the National Science Foundation. So
I also always take an aisle seat. So
yeah.
I'm going to go get that.
Isn't that cool? I just love that. Again, a tip of the hat to Johnny Jett, who told us about that on the radio show this week. It's free. Flyover Country. Wow. This went by 2 hours like that. I won't speak for you guys, but I feel
the questions of the audience think that. Yeah.
Always a thrill. Thank you so much for being here, Jeff Jarvis.
My God, they're still talking. Oh, no.
Droning on. They're used to it by now. Buzzmachine.com. Nobody ever says make your shows shorter because they just stop listening when they're done. They can make it any arbitrary length they want.
When we hired the wonderful Annie Berman, the producer of .NYC, she's what, an hour? 2 hours? No, sure, we're going to do a 20-minute show, you know.
Yeah.
And in the first two, it just feels right. We've done an hour each.
When you're having a great conversation with smart people and you're learning yourself, and I just, you know what, I was in broadcast. I am in broadcast. I've been in broadcast so long where everything is tightly timed and shorter than you could ever possibly hope. It's really nice to have. I was watching CBS this Sunday morning on Sunday, and they said, we're going to give this segment 7 minutes because it really needs some time. I am so glad I don't do that anymore. You know, you got the guy who invented the internet, but you only have 5 minutes. That's a long segment. So, we do long shows. Sorry, Stacey.
I do have to go.
I am sure you do. I have to go, too, in other ways. Stacey is at Stacey on IoT. And don't forget her podcast, stacey@iot.com. And thanks so much to you, Matthew Ingram. Back to the lake. Canoe. Summer is coming.
It is coming.
Those obnoxious show-off Matthew photos, yes.
I love those.
Those humble brags aplenty.
They're coming.
I love the lake
kayak
country.
Kayak photos.
Yep. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. We do Twig every... It's my last show of the week, my Friday show. For me, it's Wednesday for you, about 1:30 Pacific, 4:30 Eastern. That would be 20:30 UTC. If you want to watch live, we love it. Chatrooms, irc.twit.tv. You can also join us in studio if you just email tickets at twit.tv and come up to Petaluma next time you're in the area. However, on-demand audio and video is always available after the fact on twit.tv/twig. That's our website, or wherever you get podcasts. And there are Twit apps on every single platform. We didn't write them, just great fans who are great programmers too. And we thank them for writing Twit apps. Find an app, subscribe to the show, and don't miss a minute because every week is something special. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next time on Twit. Bye-bye.